The Voice.
The Voice.
The Voice.
The Voice of Birmingham and the Black Country.
They have keepers, they want somebody else to keep them.
Social services shouldn't exist.
Well, I know quite a few people have had pay cuts in their wages just to hang under their job.
Ian Lee, Saturdays,
9 till 12.
BBC WM 95.6.
Morning, this is Ian Lee, BBC WM 95.6. Thank you to Molly for the show. Thank you to Molly for the eggs. And thank you to Molly for the promise of goose eggs. Oh, we'll have some of those bad boys. Oh, yes. Lots coming up on the show this morning. Some of the things we might be talking about include free bus passes for old people. It's looking like they're in danger. What could happen is either old people's bus passes will go or other services will go. I guess the question is, what's the most important to you? Do all old people deserve free bus passes? Has Labour lost its touch with the common man? There are people who are worried that it's lost its working class, working men and women's roots. What do you think about that? But in the first hour of the show, I want to talk about death. I know, it's not the sexiest of subjects, is it? But it's something that's going to happen to all of us at some point in our lives. And not only are we going to die, but people we know are going to die. And if you've lost someone, this is what I want to talk about this morning. If you've lost someone, did your friends and your colleagues and your family, did they know what to say? Or did you feel that they avoided you slightly? It's a tough one, isn't it? When someone dies, what do you say to the remaining relatives and the remaining friends? I want to hear your story. When someone close to you died, did you feel abandoned and neglected by those around you? Give me a call, 03453 009956.
Have your say.
Across the West Midlands, call
03453
009956.
BBC WM 95.6.
That's the telephone number, I suggest. There are other ways to get in touch. There's the text, you can email me. I'll give you those a little bit later on in the show. The phone number is the best way to get in touch. It's the best way this works. Because I can sit here and read your emails and your texts, and I'm happy to do it. Very happy to do it. But it's better if you phone up, because then we can get your stories. We had some great stories last week from people who phoned up talking about one thing, and then we went off on a magical tangent, and it was wonderful. So give me a call with your stories. Now, the thing I spotted, it was in the mail, I think, was it yesterday? It may have been yesterday. Was Rachel Chadwick had written a piece about her mum dying and how people were afraid to comfort her and confront her and talk to her. And it kind of got me thinking about when my dad died. My dad died a year ago, just over a year ago now, February last year. And I had a couple of really close friends who were brilliant, brilliant. And they took me out for lunch and they phoned me up and they kept phoning me up and they were great. And when I wanted to talk, they would listen. And when I didn't want to talk, they would respectfully back away. And then I had, then people fell into two other categories. There were three categories. The people who were great, the couple of people that were great, took me out, looked after me. Then there were the people who knew they had to say something, but didn't quite know what to say. No, they had to broach the subject. It would have been rude not to, but didn't know what to say. So I had lots of people who I saw who went, oh yeah, sorry about your dad. Anyway, should we watch a film? Should we get on with work? It was that kind of, they acknowledged it, made a nod towards it, sorry to hear about your dad. And then that was that. And then there were the third type of people. The third type of people were the people that disappeared. The friends that didn't phone me, that didn't email me, that kind of just disappeared into the woodwork. And I kind of thought, oh, that's not... I don't know what I thought. I felt angry, I felt betrayed, I felt sad, I felt... I don't know what I thought. I need your stories, please. 03453 009956. What happened to you when someone you loved passed away? How were you treated by your friends and your family members and your work colleagues? And what do you think we can do differently? 03453 009956. I mentioned Rachel. Rachel Chadwick wrote this fantastic article that's in the mail yesterday. Her mum died just 2 weeks after being diagnosed with cancer. And she described people avoiding her or even crying, so she felt she should comfort them. Well, Rachel began leaving postcards in cities across the world to help deal with her grief, and she's now written a book about it called 60 Postcards. And Rachel's on the line now. Morning, Rachel.
Morning, Ian.
Now, Rachel, I'm going to, because of the very subject matter of talking about, you know, I was talking about how my dad died last year and it's your mum that passed away, I may ask questions that you think are inappropriate. And if I do, I'm not being rude, and tell me to shut up.
No. It's okay. Ask away.
Okay.
I think the important thing is that we should be able to talk about it. So that's fine.
Thank you very much. When did your mum pass away?
My mum passed away in February 2012, so we've just had the 2 years.
Okay, so 2 years. And it all happened quite quickly, did it?
Yeah, I mean, it came out of nowhere. She was unwell over Christmas time, and then it was January that she had a colonoscopy, and it was revealed that she had cancer, bowel cancer. Unfortunately, it was 16 days after that that she passed away. There was nothing they could do. It was too aggressive. So that was a complete shock for the whole family, of course.
And I can kind of identify you. I was just saying, you may not have heard that my dad passed away last February, and he was diagnosed in November. We thought we had a year, and then he passed away in February of pancreatic cancer. And it does all seem to happen so quickly. It must have been absolutely devastating for you and your family.
Yeah, it was. I mean, it's going to be devastating no matter what length of time. This is something that also comes up. I mean, but it was, as I say, it came out of nowhere. One minute she was okay, the next minute I looked at her and she was fading, and I couldn't believe it was happening so soon. And she was only 59, and it just didn't make sense to any of us, really.
We'll get on to how people treated you in a second, but I'm intrigued by the leaving postcards in cities across the world. What's your thinking behind that? How is that helping you?
Right, well, I think possibly it might be the other way around, in that the way I dealt with the grief, I didn't really know how to deal with the grief. I was really struggling, and I think I was almost angry with myself because it was such a new experience for me. I was finding it difficult to find a way to make myself feel any kind of happy in any way. I felt guilty about being happy without mum as well. But what I thought I would do is use it as an opportunity to create a tribute for her. I thought in that way I'm leaving her memory around, keeping it alive, but also it's kind of turning what would have been her 60th birthday, which would probably be quite a horrific milestone for us to have gone through. But I thought I would just do something a little bit different and try and celebrate that weekend instead. So I went off to Paris and left 60 postcards, one for every year of her life, around the city, with a message on saying why I was there and an email address on the bottom for someone to get back to me if they found it.
And did people get back in touch?
They did, yeah.
What did they say?
They were hugely supportive of the tribute, saying that they were touched by my message and just wanted to kind of reach out and get back in touch. Some of them I've kept in touch with since, and it was incredible. They were from all over the world, and I was receiving support from strangers, which I did not expect at all.
It sounds like a fantastic idea, so well done for coming up with something different and creative to celebrate your mum. But it sounds like you had a similar experience to me with the people sort of following your mum's death in not knowing what to say.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's always a difficult situation. I mean, I've really found it quite intriguing ever since it happened, just to be watching everyone else's reactions to it. It's all new to me, and it's all new to so many of my friends as well, if they haven't had someone close to them that's lost a loved one. And as you read in the article, and as you explained about your father, you know, you'd find some people that would avoid and some people that would almost be more emotional than you when they were talking to you about it, which made you feel awkward. On the other hand, though, I do explain in my book that actually there is no right or wrong way to react. It's just a kind of a lack of understanding, and also it's such an individual experience for every single person, grief. You just don't know what is best to do for someone.
Did you have that thing where sort of people you perhaps expected to help you out just kind of disappeared a bit?
Yeah, I think, there were a few occasions where some people I was surprised I didn't hear. I have to say, I haven't let that get to me at all.
Right.
I don't judge anyone for that, because if this happened to me and a friend of mine had lost someone, before all this, I wouldn't, you know, have the faintest idea what to do to help them. And I think it's just such a taboo. And I don't know if you found this as well. It's just one of those things that sometimes you yourself, you don't really know how you want to deal with it sometimes. So some days I would want to talk all day about Mum, and then there would be another day where I'd be feeling like I didn't want anyone else to mention it. So if I don't know what I want, how is anyone else supposed to know how to help me? So that's kind of why I was patient with everyone else.
And you're right. I don't think... when my dad going last year was kind of I've been lucky. It's the first time someone really, really close to me has passed away. And I don't think before last year I would have quite known what to have said. And I think I would have been awkward around other people that were in that situation. You kind of need to go through it to perhaps get an understanding of what is required. And you're right, how random your feelings can be from day to day, from hour to hour.
Yeah. That was the thing that shocked me the most, actually. You know, they talk about the five stages of grief, and I found I was getting five at one time and two the next day, and I didn't know whether I was coming or going. And I also, I don't know if you found this, but didn't want to burden people too much as well sometimes.
Yep, yep.
So you just don't want to be bringing other people down with you, because, of course, a lot of my friends knew my mum. Obviously, my family were grieving in very different ways. So we would be scared to pick up the phone to each other, not in a bad way, but if one of us is having an okay day, we didn't want to bring that person, you know, down and make them feeling sad again.
And also, I felt bad sort of crying or being upset 6 months later, because I thought, oh, maybe people will think I should be over it by now.
Yeah, that's the other thing. I think also I found a point where the silence hits, it does go quiet, and you realise that it's totally normal for everyone else because their life's just carrying on. But actually for you, it's just such a significant thing that you just notice that people are kind of stopping. And that's actually, I do mention, I kind of wanted to wear a t-shirt you know, for the day, saying, hi, she's, you know, my mum's still died and I'm not okay. So, you know, sometimes you kind of want to scream, but then other times I just wanted to run away and
Rachel, final question. I could talk to your mum about this, it's fascinating, but one more question. What do you think we can do as a society to kind of break through this taboo? I kind of think we should have death lessons in school, that kids should be encouraged to not dwell on it, but talk about it, because we don't, do we?
No, we don't. I'm one for that. I always say, let's take it into school with all these different things. I think maybe talking, maybe not lessons on death, that sounds a bit extreme, but yes. maybe you know, talks and things of experiences like this, you know, so that kids understand. And actually, I actually received 18 letters from school students of the school that my mum taught at, which I featured on my blog, and they were incredible, and I was getting support from these kids that were 8 and 9 years old, and I thought, and that was the point where I thought, wow, if children are, you know, open about it, then hopefully that you know, won't be so much of a taboo in the future.
Rachel, the book's 60 postcards. You mentioned a blog very quickly. How can people go and have a look at that?
It's very easy. It's 60postcards.com.
Excellent stuff. Listen, best of luck with the book. It looks absolutely fantastic. And thank you for bringing this up. Over to you.
Ian Lee.
On BBC WM.
95.6.
The voice of Birmingham and the Black Country.
Right, so it's over to you. It's your stories, really. How do people react when someone close to you passed away? Did they know what to do? Did they? People disappear. Friends sometimes disappear, don't they, when you really, really need them? What happened to you? And also, I guess expanding this slightly, but we need to try and come up with a solution, don't we? So what do we do? I do genuinely think we should have death lessons in school. Hey, maybe let's not call it death lessons, although, you know, kids would find that really cool. They would, wouldn't they? Maybe we need to have something where the subject is broached and it's talked about and people are encouraged to not be afraid of it and to not be afraid to talk about it. How do we get around it? How do we change the situation so that when it happens to us, I'm not saying that we know how to deal with it necessarily, but we're better prepared. We're better prepared to deal with it when it happens to us and when it happens to others around us. 03453-00-9956 is the phone number. I will give you the texts and the email address a little bit later on. I want you to phone in on this one this morning. Trish has been on for the longest. Trish is in Great Barr. Morning, Trish.
Good morning.
Trish, what would you like to say?
Well, I lost my husband from cancer just coming up for 2 years ago.
I'm really sorry to hear that, Trish.
I talked about it while he was ill. I talked about it just after he died, and all of my friends have been very supportive. Acquaintances have turned away, neighbours have turned away, but no friends.
When you say turned away, Trish, what do you mean by that?
Well, there's one couple that live down the road, and I mean they're an elderly couple, and they started crossing the road when they walked up to the bus.
They would actually cross the street so that they wouldn't have to talk to you?
Yeah.
How does that make you feel, Trish?
Bad. That makes me feel bad. I think that's the worst. I suppose it wasn't helped by the fact that just after David died, I got cancer myself. And I'm okay.
Yeah.
I've survived it.
Have you come out the other side?
I have.
Good for you. Well done.
But friends, we both, David and I, had the same hobbies. We belonged to the same craft groups, and everybody in all my groups have been very supportive and have helped me through both.
Let's focus on the positive here then, Trish. How have they helped you after David's passing? What did they do that was so beneficial for you?
Well, they came with me to book the funeral. They went with me to register his death. They've sat and listened to me when I've had tearful moments. We've laughed about his good bits and laughed about his failings, because all of us have failings.
Yep.
And we've been, we've just been able to talk and laugh about, the things that he did well and the things that he didn't do so well.
That is, I think, coming, to sign the death certificate and to help plan the funeral, that really is, that is great friendship, isn't it?
It is, yeah.
Because that must be very hard. Obviously, it's very hard for you, but it must be hard for someone coming with you as well.
Well, say, several people offered, to go with me.
You sound very lucky, Trish, because sadly, I don't think everyone has friends like that.
No, I mean, I think I have been very lucky. But, but at the same time, I have talked about it. Not been frightened to, somebody once said something about him, and they said, "Oh, do you mind me talking about him?" And I said, "No, he's still part of my life, big part of my life." And he, just because he's not here, doesn't mean he doesn't want to be talked about.
No.
Say everybody that knows me knows, most people that know me knew him, and we've just always talked about him.
Trish, I really appreciate your honesty this morning. Thank you so much for your call.
You're welcome.
Thank you very much indeed. It's Trish in Great Bar. I'm very touched by that. I think it's going to be one of those shows today. But people crossed the street when she walked down the street. Because, why? Why? I'd love to speak to you this morning. I know this is a tough call, okay? If you're one of those people that has crossed the street, if you can understand, if you can empathise with Trish's neighbours, who, because her husband died, and possibly because she got cancer as well, when they see her going for the bus, they cross the street, they don't want to talk to her. Can someone this morning help me get into the mindset of why you would do that? Why would you do that? How could you do that? Not necessarily judging, not pointing the finger. I would love to understand why you would do that. I can sort of understand not phoning someone up, not emailing somebody. It's because you don't know what to say. Okay, I'll give them a call next week, and then next week becomes it goes on and on, doesn't it? It's too soon. I'll give them a call next week. But actually, crossing the street, wow. 03453 009956. David's in Northfield. Morning, David.
Good morning.
David, what would you like to say?
Well, first off, you just asked a big question, why do people cross the street and why don't they phone? And I think that is through fear. They just don't know what to say and they're afraid to upset you.
I can understand the not phoning. I can get my head around the not phoning because it's, oh, it's too soon. I'll give them a call next week. Oh, I don't know what to say. I'll leave it. But actually crossing the street...
It's a bit extreme.
That seems a little bit worse, doesn't it?
Well, I had a better experience when my father died 20 years ago. The vicar at his funeral service gave some wonderful advice. When somebody dies, don't remember the fact that they're dead and they've gone. Remember their life. Remember the happy parts. And my father, God bless him, was a very happy soul. He was told when he was about 26 that he wouldn't see 40 because of various things, and he actually lived till he was 68. God bless him, and everybody that knew him knew he was a happy soul. And we had a party for him after his funeral, and nobody had a bad word to say for him, and everybody was coming up and talking about him, you know, as if he was still there. Because they all remembered the happy side of his life. And that's what you've got to do when somebody goes. Don't look at the sad side. Look at the smile on his face when he was alive, or her. And think about the good times that you had when you were with them. It's,
We laughed so much at my old man's funeral. I mean, we cried. We crammed a lot of emotion into 30 minutes in that crematorium, let me tell you. And when I had to get up and speak, I had to stop halfway through because I was choking. But we had such a laugh. And the wake afterwards, I was absolutely dreading. I didn't want to go to that.
Can I just add to what you said about laughing?
Yeah.
We was in the funeral cortege going to the cemetery, and I was sat next to my brother. My father used to drive the local gritting lorry.
And you didn't have him in the back of a gritting lorry, did you?
No, he was in the hearse. But he used to have a favourite saying when it snowed, and it was snowing on the day of his funeral. And it was, well, I won't do the swear words that he used to use, but the gritters haven't been out again. And I looked at my brother, and he looked at me. And we said, the gritters haven't been out again.
Boom. Fantastic.
You know,
fantastic.
Because that's what my dad would have said.
Yeah.
You know, it's, you've got to, with a father, mother, or somebody close to you, you've got to have a sense of humour when you're alive. And you've got to try to continue that after they've gone.
David, we're talking about people who've kind of maybe turned their backs when a friend's loved one passed away. What if a friend of yours was affected by losing someone very close to them? What would you do?
Well, I've actually done it with one or two friends who have lost close ones, and one of the things I do is relate my father's story. And try to get them to talk about the happy times that they had rather than dwell on the sad times that they're having. Does that make sense?
And did you... How close to the passing did you get in touch with them?
In a lot of cases, there was a fella that I've known for like 20 years died about 2 years ago. And I was at the funeral, and I was talking to his brother and a couple of other family members to encourage them to remember the good times, not the bad times.
David, thank you for that. 03453 009956. Right, okay. So we're getting somewhere now. And you can give me your stories of people turning their backs on you when someone close to you passed, and the trauma and how that must have affected you. But let's also try and focus on the positive. Let's try and work out a plan of how we change this. Do we have lessons in school? How soon after, say your best friend's mum died, how soon after that death would you phone them up? I'd be on the phone as soon as I heard about it. Hey man, I heard about your mum, really sorry. Do you want me to come round? No? Maybe I'll give you a call tomorrow in a couple of days. Something like that. Something like that. That's what I would have wanted. 03453-00-9956. Your stories this morning, please. This is one of those phone-ins that can only work. I can sit here and tell you my story. I can sit here and I can read some emails and texts and things like that. This is only going to work with your phone calls and your stories. You need to call in and let me know what happened to you and how it affected you. 03453-00-9956. I'm joined now by Jessica Smallwood, who wrote about her experience of stillbirth when you lost a twin. Morning, Jessica. Oh, Jessica, you're there. Sorry, I've got the wrong fader. Morning, Jessica.
Hi.
sorry. So just give it a little bit of background, Jessica. What happened and when?
It happened just over about 2 years ago. I have two young daughters now. They're aged nearly 6 and 2. But my youngest daughter, Josephine, was actually a twin. However, her twin didn't survive, and her twin sister, and she died quite late on during my pregnancy with her, around about 30 weeks. So I was about 30 weeks pregnant with her. But Josephine was born at 37 weeks, very well and very healthy. But unfortunately, her sister died.
Mm. That must have... Oh, I can't even begin to imagine what that must have been like for you.
Yeah, it's a bit different type of grief, really.
Mm. You've got the mixture of the joy and the grief, haven't you?
Extremely, yeah, bittersweet, that's what I've called it. I had the elation of the birth of my second child, but also the devastation of the loss of my third child, because she was still here.
Mm.
And we did have to register her death. We did have to have a funeral very soon after my girls were delivered, and it was very, very difficult dealing with a newborn baby and also my older daughter, who was about 3 and a half at the time, and also to even comprehend the loss of my baby at the same time. It was very, very difficult and devastating part of my life. But I think it's so important to talk about it as well, and to try and maybe share my story to try and offer some sort of comfort or understanding to other people who find themselves in maybe, God forbid, a similar situation.
How did people, friends, colleagues, family members, how did they react to you? Did you find they were very supportive? Were there some that didn't know what to say, so they kind of disappeared? What happened?
To be honest, Ian, it was a bit of a mixed bag.
Mm.
It still is, actually, even just over 2 years later, because Josephine was 2 in December, just gone. In the main, I did find that most people just didn't say anything about it at all. With friends, that is.
Your friends, most friends didn't say anything about it?
My very close friends did.
Yeah.
But a lot of people didn't know what to say. I think they felt so uncomfortable about mentioning it that they didn't. Some people turned their backs. Some people didn't even, well, not very close friends, but maybe more like acquaintances, didn't even acknowledge the birth of Joseph.
Because it would have meant they would have had to have acknowledged the death of... What was your other baby called?
My little girl was called Harriet.
Okay, so they would have had to have acknowledged the death of Harriet in that case as well. So they just ignored everything.
And very few people said her name, or have said it, and still don't say her name, or don't remember.
Oh dear!
But there was a small network of friends who were very supportive and were equally very upset about it. My family offered me and gave me so much support and love. I'm very close to my family and my husband as well, because it affected him too. And very few people have mentioned it to my husband.
And has that aspect of it affected your husband? Obviously, whenever there are pregnancies, the majority of the focus is on the mum, of course. Mm. And I remember when my two boys, my wife was pregnant with my two boys, I kind of felt, hey, I'm a little bit of I'm part of what's going to be happening here as well. Mm. So I felt excluded with two very healthy, luckily healthy births. How did he feel being, people ignoring him when he'd lost a daughter?
Mm. I think he felt lonely. We both felt very lonely, actually. But we did help. We have helped each other through. Somehow we have. But he did feel very lonely. I remember when we found out, we went to the scan and we were told that Harriet's heart had stopped beating. He phoned work to tell them, and he took the rest of the day off. But he went in the next day. He shouldn't have done, but he went in.
Yep.
But he couldn't do it. He couldn't get through the day, so came home. And his workplace were very supportive of him, but friends of ours did not know what to say to him at all, I think, and did tend to just focus on how I was doing. And people did say we had to focus on our healthy daughters, and it's okay, we've got two, you know. But that didn't really cut the mustard and didn't really offer too much comfort at the time.
Let's try and focus on the positive.
Yeah.
You said that your close friends and your family offered you lots of love and support. What did they do that was so good?
They listened, and they were just there. Arrived at the door, you know. They phoned. They didn't text so much. They went. They saw me personally, you know, or they wrote a letter. I think they listened, and they also gave me time to be sad, which I think is so important. They didn't expect me to get on with it as quickly as I could, you know, and to just get through. They talked to me about it, and they asked what they could do that would help, you know. And they in a way they validated something like that. When people acknowledge that you've lost someone that you love, when people say their name, when people acknowledge what has happened and maybe cry themselves and perhaps talk about their experiences too, then it does help, and there is some sort of comfort there, and it is validating your loss.
Two words you've said there: acknowledge and validating. And I think that those are the key things. It's I do you know what? It is really awkward for someone on the outside to bring up the subject. Hey, Jessica, I'm really sorry to hear that you lost your daughter. It is awkward, but once you get through that initial awkwardness, it can prompt, you know, a very natural, healthy conversation that's helpful for both parties.
Absolutely, because there are people out there. There's so many people who have lost babies is what I'm going to just saying from my personal story. So many people who have lost babies during pregnancy, during birth, during infancy, that we don't know about. And it's only when we start talking that we find out that people have got stories too, and we can help each other. We can help each other.
Jessica, you've written about your experience and the sad loss of Harriet. Where can people read that if they want to have a little look?
Well, I'm just in the process of setting up a blog, actually. I've tried several times to do it, but now I'm getting there.
Good.
But I am passing the details on to BBC Coventry and Warwickshire, and they're going to pop it onto their website.
Brilliant. Okay.
There'll be a link on there. And can I just say something? There is a charity called the Mariposa Trust, and people may have heard about it. Saying Goodbye is a division of the charity, and I did go to a memorial and a remembrance service about 18 months ago, which have been set up across the country, and they're also going worldwide now for anybody who has experienced a loss of a child at any stage, and I found that extremely comforting, and I can't recommend that enough. And there is a support network there. You can find them online on Twitter. And perhaps we could put those details on the website.
I'm sure we can sort that out. Jessica, thanks very much.
Amazing. Okay.
Thank you very much. Jessica Smallwood there. Right. Different angle to it. Lost a daughter. Stillbirth. Great, isn't it? She said that her family and some of her closest friends knew exactly what to do. What is it? It's just being there. And it's not. She said something that kind of made me laugh. Because people didn't send texts, which is great. Imagine you get a bleep on your phone, you look at it, oh yeah, sorry your dad died. You're all right. Oh, thanks for the text, mate. Smiley face. Thanks for the text. People phoned or went round. Or, did you hear that? That word from the 1950s wrote her letters? Wow. 03453 009956. I need your stories this morning. What happened to you when someone passed away? And have you been that friend? Let's look at this the other side. And we're not judging anybody this morning. Have you been that friend who didn't know what to say? 13, 14 months ago, I wouldn't have known what to say. Sadly, positively, I don't know. I do know now. It's not a script. I can't tell you what to say. I just kind of would know what I wanted to hear. 03453 009956. Thelma's on the line. Morning, Thelma.
Oh, good morning. I was just having a drink of coffee.
Oh, you have a little sip of coffee, my love. Go on.
Yes. Sorry about my voice. We lost a lad at 9, and people who, you know, for years, they sort of saw you coming down the road, they'd cross over the road and walk away.
So hang on, sorry, Velma, your boy died when he was 9?
Yes.
What happened?
He had a brain tumour, and we was taking him to the doctors every week for 6 weeks, and he was an overactive mother. And he very rarely went to school for that 6 weeks. And all of a sudden, we had to rush him off to the neurosurgery, and they gave him 2 weeks to live.
Oh, Velma.
And it's harder to lose a child when you've born one, reared one, than that childbirth. I know it's, you know, the
no, I understand what you're saying.
But you've reared a child, and for all these years, my daughter didn't want to know. See, we've got to talk about this now. If anything happened to us, you know what to do. And at the time, I didn't want to know. So when she had the grandad, a lad, and he was about 5, we were going to have the acre to Bromley, we passed the cemetery, and it was so comical. Who lives there now? I said, the dead people. Okay then. And then the next thing we know, he said to my husband, "Granddad, can I borrow your blazer?" He said, "Why?" He said, "Well, when my nan dies, I haven't got to take the badge off my blazer at school." And he says, "Are you being buried or cremated?" I said, "Cremated. Can I light your fire?"
There you go, you see.
You see, now, he'll talk about it till the heavens opened up. But people listen talking to him, and they think, you know, they look at you as though you've gone stark raving mad. I mean, he might be the kid, he's 20 now. But
so Thelma, what on earth is wrong with your voice, my love?
I've been like this since I had a big hernia done, and so I had to take some bowel away.
Oh, dear. Oh, crikey.
And all of a sudden, my voice has been like this now about 6 weeks.
Oh, dearie me.
It'll get better.
Is it? It will get better, will it?
I hope so.
Oh, yeah, so do I. So does Birmingham and the West Midlands. So you're suggesting we need to start talking about this at a young age.
Yes.
And you said that people crossed over the side, that crossed over the road when your lad died.
And you wave to them, you know, as you're going out and going to work. And then they look at you, then you can see them crossing over the opposite way and then and turning round and going off. And you think, but they've got nothing to say, they don't know what to say to you. You know, it's nice if they come up and say to you, "Oh, are you okay?" And then that's it. But they just don't know what to say.
So how did that make you feel, Thelma?
Hurt.
Yeah.
You know, at the time you feel hurt. I mean, you're upset in any case about Lou. I mean, the bereaved one. No matter it's how old or what. But it's just, I thought, well, my friend came from Worcester to, you know, and I stood outside when we were at the funeral. And she wouldn't come in. And I've known her ever since we were 7. And that hurt. And my brother had, because we had him in the house at the day of the funeral, my brother wouldn't come in the house because his body was in the house. And that hurt.
That must have hurt a lot.
Yeah. You know, especially when the family don't want to come in. And because he brought his lads to the funeral. And I thought, well, he died from home. And he's got to go from home. You know, I mean, that's where his place was. And it's surprising how many don't come into the house when the body's in the house.
Yeah.
You know, it was nice.
Thelma, listen, I really appreciate your call this morning. Go and drink, go and have a nice glass of water or something. Rest, don't speak for the rest of the day.
It'll be like this for ages.
Oh, mate.
Never mind. I've got my feet above ground.
I've not heard that saying before, but that's a very apt one. Velma, thank you very much indeed. Bless her. With her croaky voice. Oh, dear. 03453 009956. What do we do? What do we do? How do we educate people to, I was going to say, not feel awkward around death? I guess that's always going to be the way, isn't it, for the majority of people. But what can we do to ease that? What can we do to ease that? We got a text. Dave in Sutton has sent a text in. We're going off on a slight tangent, which I do not mind in the slightest. One of the things you'll notice on this show is tangents are welcome. I like exploring little side avenues. And we spoke to a guest earlier on who was talking, Jessica, was talking about losing one of her twins, stillborn. Dave has texted him, 81333, starting his text WM. There you go. I told you I'd give you the number. In 2001, my wife was pregnant, went into hospital and had to lie on a bed for 3 months. Sadly, our daughter was stillborn. After 3 months, my wife walked out of hospital feeling empty and lost. My mother also had a stillborn in 1967. The child was removed before my mum could say hello or goodbye. It seemed in those days they treated the mother very badly. I can't come on air, Ian, as it still upsets me every day, even though it was 13 years ago. Well, thank you for the text, Dave. And you kind of got to wonder, is 13 years later, is Dave getting any support? Because I bet that the majority of Dave's mates will be thinking, oh, it was 13 years ago, Dave. I may be wrong. I hope I'm not doing your friends a disservice by saying that, Dave. I'm sure there are a few that are still good. But colleagues and casual acquaintances, oh, for goodness, it was 13 years ago, Dave. Get over it. Get over it. Is that the case, Dave? Let me know. Let me know what support you had from friends and family.
Middleton.
Mile Old.
Moseley.
Oldbury.
Hattingham.
Have your say across the West Midlands.
BBC
WM 95.6. I've been given strict instructions, and I'm going to give strict instructions to a gentleman in Solihull. I believe it was Donald. Donald, call us back. Now. That's an order. I tell you why. I suspect that one of my team, I'm working with the C team today, I suspect that one of my team took your phone number down wrong. Is that right? Is that right? Yeah, that's right. Donald, we lost your phone number. 03453 009956 is the telephone number. If you give us a call back, please, sir. Thank you very much indeed. So, what do you do when someone dies? What do you say? How do you react? How do you react to a friend if they've lost someone? Well, maybe my next guest can shed some light on it. Alison Thompson from the charity Cruise Bereavement Care. Morning, Alison.
Good morning.
We're talking this morning about how people quite often don't know what to say to someone who's lost a relative or a loved one. It seems a common problem, doesn't it?
Yes, it does. I mean, our National Helpline, one of the top inquiries that our National Helpline receives is, what do I say to somebody who's just been bereaved?
Wow.
And I think that we have a difficulty, particularly in Western society, with acknowledging somebody's loss. So I think that's where the difficulties can lie.
What do you... I was saying, I lost my dad last year, and I now know what I would have liked people to say to me. But when someone phones up and says, what do I say to my mate whose mum's just died? What's your response? What's the answer?
We suggest that, first of all, you acknowledge that person's grief. You know, that you say, I am sorry to hear that so-and-so has died. And we also... encourage people that if they're going to speak to a bereaved person, not to be visibly put off if somebody starts to cry, because it's, you know, clearly it's an extremely emotional time. Somebody's life has changed forever through the death of somebody close. So we always say that, you know, if somebody cries or, you know, in reaction to you acknowledging the grief, then not to be visibly put off by that either.
Is that a British thing? Because British people, I get the impression, don't know what to do when there's someone crying in front of them. And the crying of when you've lost someone, it's different from having a little weep, isn't it?
Yeah, it most definitely is. I think it is a Western thing,
right,
where people do find it difficult, and when they're confronted with somebody who's crying, I think that the good intention and the goodwill is there, but I think people aren't that skilled to cope really with other people's visible emotions. So I think it can be quite difficult, and I know that a lot of people that I've worked with who have been providing support or acknowledging the loss of a friend or colleague who's been bereaved And they, the first thing they say is, well, I don't know what to do. I don't want to make it worse. So that when they do acknowledge the loss, and if somebody cries in return, they automatically, sometimes they tend to think, oh, I've caused that, or I have made it worse, or I've brought it up, when actually that isn't the case.
No, though crying, it can be incredibly cathartic.
Absolutely.
What do we do, Alison, to change this? I'm a big fan. I've got the term slightly wrong, but I think we should have death lessons in schools where we talk about death, and because we don't talk about it until it happens.
I am in complete agreement with you there. I think that we should start talking about death to our children, young people, from as early as primary school age, and, you know, obviously using words and imagery that's appropriate to the child or young person's cognitive level of understanding. But I think it's really important, because I think that people sometimes don't, you know, particularly younger people, that they can believe in this sense of own immortality. And if they've never been bereaved before, when it actually happens, when they do lose somebody close, it can be extremely, extremely painful. So I think we need to start having a dialogue about death from an early age. So I'm in complete agreement with you.
Alison, I know that Crewe's Bereavement Care do lots of good work. If people want to get in touch for whatever reason, where can they find you?
The best thing to do is to take a look at our website, which is www.crewes.org.uk, and there you'll find tips on how to cope. You'll find the contact details for all of our areas and branches, PAN UK, and also we have a children's site, which is www.rd, the letters RD, the numeric 4, letter U, rdforyou.org.uk, and that's very useful. That's particularly for children, young people who are experiencing grief, the loss of someone close.
Alison Thompson from the charity Crewe's Bereavement Care, thank you. 03453 009956.
BBC WM.
95.6.
We're going to carry on taking your calls on that. Again, the way the show works, we ping-pong all over the subject horizon. I got lost in that sentence. Sorry, guys. So you can keep on calling about things you've heard, but I do want to get this in before 10 o'clock. Parents in the West Midlands here are stealing food and nappies for their children. That's according to new figures. The West Midlands Force has seen a rise of 11% in the number of shoplifting cases in the last year, with basics, so basic foods, your bread, your milk, your butter, rather than high-value items being targeted. Would you steal for your family? If you had to, would you do it? 03453 009956. I'm joined now by Bob Jones, the Police and Crime Commissioner for the West Midlands. Morning, Bob.
Good morning, Ian.
So what's going on?
Well, obviously this was one of our monthly reports in terms of crime trends and seeking to analyse what's happening out there and what we can actually do about it. And clearly we are picking up this trend both within the West Midlands and across the country, that we're seeing significant increases in certain sorts of crime, crime in total, which seems to be more focused on areas of greater deprivation. And we are very much getting the information back that a lot of this is being driven by the fact that people, there's high unemployment, there's lots of zero-hour contract, commission-only contract, and lots of benefit reductions, which are driving people to seek to replace the basics rather than necessarily steal for profit.
I'm trying to get my head around this, Bob, and I can't quite work out where I sit. Is there really a need in 2014 for people to steal to feed their children?
Well, I mean, it was interesting. We saw a case just announced yesterday where somebody had starved to death after a benefit cut. So clearly there is hardship out there. I don't think that condones criminality. And part of these strategies is many police officers are supporting and promoting things like food banks to show there are alternatives to having to turn to crime.
Because I'm thinking, if I ever got in a dire situation, heaven forfend, where my kids were hungry, I would steal to feed them. If there was no other option, then I would do it. Do the police treat the people they catch doing this because of these reasons? Do they treat them differently, or do they feel the same force?
Well, I think we hope to treat everyone professionally and appropriately, and There is an element where we try and understand where people are actually coming from. Obviously, we don't condone any criminality whatsoever, and a lot of the strategy is about pointing out there are still alternatives. We've seen an explosion in the need for food banks, but the availability of food banks, and a lot of work is actually done for people who may be vulnerable to temptation in this particular way, of trying to direct them in other ways to ensure that their families do get fed, but they don't have to turn to criminal means to do it.
Would you say, Bob, that the reason that some people are stealing to feed their families and feed their children and get nappies for their children, that it's the fault of the government?
Well, clearly some of the policies that have happened have not assisted in that particular way. And, we are hearing continual tales of benefits being cut, benefits, penalties being stopped, and people having no recourse to the traditional safety nets that were available in the past. Now, clearly there has to be alternatives to that. Hopefully we're pointing them at alternatives that are legal rather than them turning to criminality. But clearly the figures would suggest significant numbers are, and we're obviously seeking to work with the retail industry and others to find ways to actually minimise it. But obviously we're trying to seek not just to attack the crime, we're trying to look at ways we can impact on the causes of the crime as well.
Bob, I don't know your situation, I don't know if you're married, you've got kids or not, but if you found yourself in a dire situation where you had no money and your kids were hungry and they didn't have clean nappies, would you steal for them?
I'd clearly be sorely tempted, but obviously I would want to explore every alternative, and that's what we're working on, is pointing out people there are alternatives. There's some extremely hard-working charities that are seeking to be there to help, and while the safety net's not as extensive as before, there is still a safety net, and often some of these issues can be appealed against, and there are people out there who can help you fight your way through a very complex social security system and make sure you do get at least enough money to hopefully feed your family.
Bob, always good to talk to you. I know you've got a busy day, so thanks for squeezing us in.
No problem, Ian.
Thank you very much indeed. Bob Jones, Police and Crime Commissioner for the West Midlands. Wow. Let's analyse what was said there, shall we? So, we know there is an increase in the West Midlands and in Birmingham of people stealing to feed their families and things like nappies, wet wipes for their kids. And it's the basic stuff they're stealing. It's bread and it's milk and it's cheese and it's a bit of meat. It's not, they're not stealing, bottles of champagne or Rolls Royces. They're stealing the basics. Bob Jones, Police and Crime Commissioner for the West Midlands, believes that a huge portion of the responsibility must come down on the government because of their cuts to benefits, their changes to benefits, and things like that, the zero-hour contracts. 03453-00956. Whose fault is it? And you've got to look at it a bit differently. So interesting that Bob says, and I've written this down so I get it right, if he was in that situation where he couldn't feed his family, he would be, quote, sorely tempted to steal. Sorely tempted. My card's on the table. Yeah, if I was in that position, there was no other option, of course I'd do it. Of course I'd do it. I couldn't let my boys go hungry. Of course I'd do it. That's my opinion. What's yours? Is there ever a reason to steal? Do you agree with Bob that it's the government's responsibility that so many people are stealing basics? And would you be sorely tempted? 03453-00956. Do we treat people differently? Should we treat people differently who are stealing to feed their family? Or do we treat them the same as criminals who are just on the rob? You know, to feed their drug habits or to just for the kicks? It's hard, isn't it, to differentiate between them in terms of law. I think I know where I am on this. I'm not 100% sure. This is one of those where I need you to kind of help me clarify my thoughts a little bit. So, get your thinking caps on. We're going to go to the news in a second. So you've got a couple of minutes to have a little think and to dial up with the answer. 03 453 00956. Lots to consider there. More families are stealing the basics to feed their children. Whose fault is that? Are there enough alternatives? And would you, like Bob Jones, the Police and Crime Commissioner for the West Midlands, would you be sorely tempted if you were in the same position?
The Voice.
The Voice.
The Voice.
The Voice of Birmingham and the Black Country.
They ask you, do they want somebody else to keep them?
Social services shouldn't exist.
Well, I know quite a few people that have had pay cuts in their wages just to hang on to their job.
Ian Lee, Saturdays,
9 till 12.
BBC WM 95.6.
I've got a feeling it's going to be one of those shows. You can still call in and tell us how grief affected you, and more importantly, how people treated you when someone close to you died. In this hour, we're going to try and squeeze in talking about bus passes. Bus passes may be under threat, or other services may be under threat if they want to keep bus passes. Should all old people get bus passes? I can tell you the answer. It's no. Right now, I want to carry on what we were discussing with Bob Jones. The fact that parents in the West Midlands are stealing food basics and nappies for their kids. The West Midlands Police Force has seen a rise of 11% in the number of shoplifting cases in the last year, with basics rather than high-value items being targeted. Bob Jones, the Police and Crime Commissioner for the West Midlands himself, said if he were in that situation, he would be sorely tempted. And he blamed a lot of it on the government's changes and cuts to the benefit system. So, is there any need to steal to feed your family? Would you do it? 03453 009956.
Have your say.
Across the West Midlands, call 03453 009956.
BBC WM 95.6.
So, is there any need to steal to feed your family? Would you do it? 03453 009956. Well, Shan's in Sutton Coldfield. Morning, Shan.
Hello.
Shan, would you do it?
I have done.
When did you do it?
It wasn't altogether that long ago. It was about 8 months ago.
What did you take?
I'm laughing. I don't condone it. Don't get me wrong. I did it because I was desperate.
Yeah.
But I took some nappies because I've got a little daughter, and just some little bits and pieces of food.
As a father of two, I know for a fact that nappies are well expensive.
Yeah, they are.
What? They are.
My daughter's actually out of them now.
Right.
But at the time, I mean, I've got an older son. I've got a 16-year-old and I've got a 2.5-year-old. So, and both of them have needs that benefits sometimes just don't cover.
What kind of needs?
Well, to eat, for starters. And the way the government has changed the benefit system is if you are on in receipt of Job Seekers Allowance or anything like that, income support, you are not entitled to any sort of help in an emergency unless you've got a valid reason to go to a food bank.
How many times did you steal, Shan?
I've done it once.
What? How did you get into the situation where you needed to steal that once? Was it bad money management on your part?
No, it was having to pay out so much in that week that I just ran short.
Can I ask the questions I always ask in these situations?
Yeah.
Do you smoke?
No.
Have you got Sky or satellite TV or anything?
No, I haven't.
So you just got your normal Freeview?
Sorry?
You've just got the normal Freeview.
Yes.
Okay, fine, because those are always the points I raise. And if anyone says they smoke, or they've got Virgin or Sky, well, then I lose all respect for you. Shan, stay there a second, because Wendy's in Woodgate. Morning, Wendy.
Morning, Shan. Morning.
It's Ian. It's Ian.
Ian.
It doesn't matter. I forget it sometimes. Wendy, I don't know if you just heard there, but Shan has stolen food and nappies for her kids. What's your reaction?
My reaction is, and I'm sorry just for Sharon, but
Shan.
Yeah. In the 70s and 80s, I brought up four boys, which are all grown and healthy now, and I didn't steal nappies. I had to. We bought terry nappies. Now, if you buy terry nappies, you can wash them, dry them, and put them on again. There's no need to steal nappies.
Shan?
I'll differ there, because there is, and I've never used toweling nappies. I'm not about to start to, and not only that, my daughter is allergic to every nappy going except for Pampers.
Here we go.
So So, well, she is, and that's something medical that you don't know, so you can't say, here we go. But that is how it is. And when I run out of nappies, I'm not about to start putting toweling nappies on her that she doesn't feel comfortable in. So, not at all.
Wendy?
I can't answer that, but a lot of the people, if you know you're pregnant, you start saving up and buy these things.
But these are your views. I'm not saying...
Exactly, they're my views.
Yes, they are your views.
And I don't think that it shouldn't happen.
Well, I'm not saying that. I've gone out and I've shopped every week.
I've been short of money, but I've never gone out and stole. I was brought up never to steal.
And I don't
think it's right. I've had four boys.
Oh, my Lord.
And we've had beans on toast, but I've never gone out and stole.
Wendy,
I wouldn't do that.
Wendy, let Shan come back. Go on, Shan.
I'm not saying I don't condone what I did whatsoever. And I would never, ever, ever condone anybody do it as a shoplifting, because it increases taxpayers and there's so many more reasons why you shouldn't. But at that present moment in time that I needed to shoplift, I had no food in my cupboards, I had a child that was hungry, and I went and did what I needed to do to provide for my family. Yes, it was against the law, and to be truthfully honest, if it came to it, I would go and do it again. And I was brought up not to steal, but when it comes down to the simple fact that your child is starving, you will go and steal. So,
Wendy, you can hear that Shan is very upset and was obviously in a place of great desperation.
I am getting upset because her views there were very strong, and they...
But Shan, you again, Shan, I'm trying to, you know, you have to understand that some people do think that what you did, stealing the nappies for your kids, is wrong. Wendy, how would you respond to Shan? She was in a real place of desperation, wasn't she?
Obviously, but, you know, she knew she was pregnant. There's no need for it. There's no need to steal. You've got family, friends.
How do you know that?
Oh, you're telling me that you haven't got any family that you can fall back on.
How do you know that? That is what I'm asking you.
You're not the only one. We were in desperation. But you don't know what we were doing in the 60s and 70s. But we believe there's a lot of people brought kids up on telly nappies. And I think you'll find a lot of people will agree with me.
Wendy, Wendy, do you think that we should... I think I know the answer to this. Do you think that we should be slightly lenient, more lenient, on people like Shan, who are in real desperate situations and they can't see any other option apart from to steal nappies and to steal a little bit of food to feed their kids?
I'll be quite honest, no. If they can't afford to look after the kids, they shouldn't have them. Now, I'm sorry, but I've got to go because I'm driving. Bye.
And that's Wendy gone.
Well, I think Wendy's views are disgusting, to be honest.
Yeah.
And if it came down to the simple fact that her four children that she brought up, if they were starving, that she would not go and get them food, that in my books makes her a bad mother. Whether or not what I did was illegal, at the end of the day, my child's needs comes first. And if that means I have to go and get a tin of beans, I will go and do it.
You're right.
Yeah.
Okay, listen, I really...
I'm fine. I just... Any mother that needs to provide for their children would do whatever it took to provide for their children. So...
Shan... Well, go and have a cup of tea.
Thank you.
And I really appreciate your honesty this morning.
Okay.
Thank you very much indeed. And you've, whatever you think, you've got to respect her for being completely honest and coming on and saying that. It's a very simple question. Shan or Wendy? Who do you agree with? Shan, who stole some nappies and some beans and some other bits and pieces for her kids because she was having a really bad week? Or Wendy, who thinks that what Shan did is disgusting and is... unnecessary and wrong? 03453 009956. Is there always an alternative? Is there always a way around it? Are you going to come on and be as brave as Shan and say, do you know what? We had a tough week. We had a tough month. I went and nicked some bread. I went and nicked some baby wipes. 03453 009956. I'm so glad that both of them called in, because they've kind of made my job easier. They've given me, in the space of that, what, 7 minute phone chat, they've given me both sides of the story. Makes it easier for me to label now. Are you Shan? Are you on Shan's side? Or are you on Wendy's side? 03453 009956 is the telephone number. This all came because there are more stealing of basics, not luxury goods, but basics, happening in Birmingham and the West Midlands. Nappies, beans, bread, milk, things like that. Bob Jones, the Police and Crime Commissioner for West Midlands, blames it on the government changes to benefits, and he said, quote, he would be sorely tempted, unquote. If he were in that situation, he would be sorely tempted to steal food for the kids. 03453 009956 is the phone number. You can give us a call about that. It's going to be one of those hours, I suspect. So, parents in the West Midlands are stealing food basics and nappies for their children. That's according to new figures. The West Midlands Force has seen a rise of 11% in the number of shoplifting cases in the last year, and it's basics that are being stolen. So not high-value stuff, it's the basics, it's the bread, the milk, the cheese, the nappies. Is there any real need in 2014 to steal to feed your family? Would you do it? Bob Jones, Police and Crime Commissioner for the West Midlands, blames it on the government, says it's primarily the changes in the benefit system that's causing this, and that if he were in that situation, he could be, quote, sorely tempted. We just spoke to Shan, who's done it, stolen nappies and some beans. We spoke to Wendy. It was dead against it. I thought what Shan did was disgusting. Over to you. Whose side are you on, Shan or Wendy? 03-453-009956. Mark's in Briley Hill. Morning, Mark.
Hello.
What do you reckon, Mark?
It's Briley Hill.
Oh, Briley. I do it. Sorry, of course. I'm trying to do seven things at once at the moment. Okay. And I'm doing all of them badly.
I'll forgive you.
What do you reckon, Mark?
I'm on both sides of the fence.
Yep.
I work in a... it'd be called it a shop. It's a big shop, let's say. We have shop thieves come in, they steal luxury goods, small things, put them in the pram, they're out. But do we need to steal? We need to do hard things in hard times. But on the other hand, my nan always told me, you pay for a roof over your head. That's your main priority. Food in your cupboards, that's your second, and then your gas and your electric. That's your main priorities. Right. If you're on benefit, you don't have to pay rent. You don't have to pay council tax. So you've got £68 in your pocket.
Well, I think you have to pay some of your council tax, don't you, now? They've changed it, so you have to pay, is it 20%?
Yeah, but you phone them up, you say, I can't afford £35 this week, I can afford £15. They say yes.
Does that actually work?
It does work. You phone up your creditors. If you owe £35 a month to the catalogue, you phone them up and say, I can't afford that. I can afford £15.
But
they have to accept it.
But Mark, what if you've not got anything from the catalogue? What if you really are living the basic life and you just one week you're paying out so much, like Shan was, that you couldn't afford to buy nappies and a tin of beans for your kids?
Right, tin of beans, 16 pence. You can't say that you haven't got 16 pence in your house. I've been there. I've searched through the settee for pennies. Yeah? I've never stole. On Wendy, she's got some old views, but she's got some good points. You do pick up money, budget it. If you budget your money properly, you have money. Yeah? You go week by week by, you know, on benefits. Sometimes it's every 2 weeks. But say you've got paid every 2 weeks, pretend you get paid every week on that second week. Do you get what I mean?
I do. Mark, listen, thank you very much indeed. 03453 009956 is the telephone number. May's in Solihull. Morning, May.
Morning,
I guess the question is, Shan or Wendy? Whose side are you on?
Oh, definitely Wendy.
The Wendy side, that you shouldn't steal, that there's never any need for it. Tell me why.
Well, I brought my children up in the 50s and 60s. I had six kids, and a husband who didn't like work very much. And I had this conversation with a friend the other day. When my kids were little, there was no such things as benefits. We paid full rent, full gas, full electric. I used to go round and look for pop bottles, beer bottles, and I'm not ashamed to say it, that people had thrown away because there used to be 2p on a bottle in those days.
Yeah, but and with the greatest respect, May, that was wonderful, and I think we all did that when we were younger. You can't do that now.
Well,
you can't go and get your tuppence on a bottle of soda dispensers.
They've got benefits today, Ian. We couldn't. It was called public assistance in those days, and you couldn't get it. And we also bought terry towel in nappies, which would last from child to child. Today's mothers don't want to wash those nappies. It's too easy to buy disposables and throw them away. I'm with Wendy.
Do you think, May? Because I've bought nappies and they cost an absolute. They cost a fortune.
Do
you think that that in losing some of the old skills and techniques, like cleaning terry towel in nappies and putting them on, do you think that we've lost? Part of this is our fault. The fact that some people are struggling.
Yes, in a lot of ways. In a lot of ways, because it's just too easy today, Ian, and it's too easy to get benefits. And like that young man just said, if you only get paid once a fortnight, you budget your money, you whack it in half. As I say, I used to take pop bottles back. I used to wait for the gas man to come to empty the meter to see if there was any coppers to come back.
So none of this is the government's fault?
No, I think this government and other governments are very generous with benefits. I think there's a lot of people on benefits who shouldn't be.
Mm.
I've paid tax all my life. I'm a pensioner, obviously, now. And I still pay income tax. And I still pay full council tax and everything that goes with it. You know, I've never been on benefits in my life.
May, stay there, because I think Ranjit might have a slightly different point. Ranjit, May's saying that it's not the government's fault. You disagree, do you?
I totally disagree, yeah.
Tell me why.
Okay, first thing is, you know that Shan, if she did steal from that shop, why didn't she go back in half an hour later and spoke to the shopkeeper? I said, listen, this is what I've done half an hour ago because I was desperate, or an hour ago.
Because he would have nicked her.
No. I'm a retailer, yeah? And if she went in genuinely and said, yesterday I nicked a tin of beans and a loaf of bread to feed my children, what I'm going to do today is I've come and owned up, but I'll do an hour or 2 hours cleaning for you.
Oh, Ranjit, come on now. But most shopkeepers would call the police and get her done, or the very banner.
No, I don't think they would. I wouldn't, right? I would tell her, listen, you got no right to steal my property, yeah? Okay? But anyway, you should call that Shan back up and ask her, did she ever vote? Does she vote? That's the first thing.
What's that got to do with it?
No. Because people don't vote, yeah? All them, say, only 30% turnout, the government, whoever's in, will say 70%.
Ranjit, if your kids are hungry and they've got dirty backsides, whether you voted or not isn't going to be the top of your thoughts,
well,
is it?
That's why I'm blaming the government, right? Because the majority of the people don't vote, right? What we should do is vote for the opposite party that's in your local area. So it could be Conservatives, then vote for Labour. It could be Labour. Show them the detest that we've got for them, because the society now, there's a two-tier system, the ones who have gory and plenty of us who haven't got.
May says, I've got this right, I think, May, you said that it's not the government's fault that people are having to steal to buy food and clean their kids' backsides.
Okay.
No, it isn't. The government gives them money. They should work it out how to spend it.
Ranjit?
Ian, you know when you know this bedroom tax, yeah?
Yeah.
Say you've been living in a 4-bedroom house and you only need one. Okay, I agree with that principle that they should find you somewhere else. But when they say to you, Ian, you're going to have to leave or we're going to cut your benefits, you should say to them, listen, you can't cut my benefits until you find me somewhere, and the status quo should stay then. I'm a retailer. Since June the 1st, we've seen a downturn when people have had their benefits cut and they've got nowhere else to go. These people in power, all three parties, they make a decision. They say, Ian, you've got three extra bedrooms, we're going to charge you, and you can't reply back, right, and say, find me somewhere else.
But Ranjit, aren't these people lucky, as May says, that they get so many benefits anyway? They get job seekers allowance, they get council tax reductions, they get child allowance, they get all of these things.
Okay, I'm going to give you an example. When I was a child, right, my dad went to work. He walked from Smethwick to Briley Hill because he never had the bus fare. Those times were hard. And me, my two sisters and my brother and my mum and a friend, we shared one bag of chips. I now run a fish and chip shop, yeah? If I have to throw any food away at night, it still, 40 years later, reminds me of the day when six people shared a bag of chips. I've had it hard, and I know how hard it is. But when I watch all these politicians from all the parties, yeah, they have never had it hard, and they don't know what they're on about. And the only people that can change that is everybody was to turn out, vote the opposite party in.
Okay, Ranjit, mate, thank you very much for that. But very different opinions there. 03453 009956. I didn't realise Ranjit ran a fish and chip shop. Hey, I really fancy a bag of chips now. Oh, a big bag of chips. Wouldn't that be great? Load too much salt and vinegar. But yes, please. You want salt and vinegar with that? You better believe it, baby. Red sauce, of course. Red sauce. Who'd have brown sauce? Only some kind of deviant would have brown sauce. Disgusting. You can judge the character of a man or a woman. A woman would never have brown sauce. They're just far too classy for something like that. But also, he says if someone came in and nicked something and then came back the next day and said, oh, I'm sorry, I nicked something from your shop, he'd let them off. How are you going to nick something from a bag of, from a chip shop? You're not going to nick a Ginsters, are you? You're going to get around the back and nick a Ginsters, nick a pickled egg when they're not looking. You put your hand in and get a battered sausage. It's not quite going to work like that. And I don't think most shopkeepers would do that. If you went in and said, oh, I'm really sorry, I nicked something last week, can I work for a couple of hours for free? Yeah, can you just tidy that while I call the police and have you arrested? If you went in a week later with the money and said, I nicked some nappies last week, they were a tenner, here's a tenner. Maybe they'd go for that. 03453 009956. There is an increase in the basic things being stolen, including nappies and including bread and milk. It's people trying to feed their families. We spoke to Shan, she's done it. Stole some nappies and some beans and some other bits and pieces. She's not proud of it, she was in tears. Ashamed of it. But she did it. And she called up and told me. So thank you, Shan. Wendy called up and thought that what Shan did was disgusting. So are you a Shan or are you a Wendy? 03453 009956. Maggie, stay there. I'll speak to you in a second. Let me just read this email from David. You can email, by the way, ian.lee@bbc.co.uk. ian.lee. Ian, I don't think it's quite as simple as taking sides. I believe the problem has come about by the change in attitude of the general public in respect of belief that what we're, and I believe what should still be, what were luxury, sorry, are now rights, and a have-to-have and a must-have now attitude. One major right they have is to vote for the party they believe will help them. But I seriously doubt whether many of those who complain about the government bother to vote. Wendy did not say she would not feed her children. She said she would ask her friends and family. There are now food banks and various other charities for those genuinely in need. One other point strikes me. Might there be some correlation between the theft of all those tins of beans and the need for more nappies? Dave, thank you very much indeed. Maggie's been waiting for a while. Morning, Maggie.
Morning.
What would you like to say, Maggie?
Well, I'm sort of three quarters on Sharon's side.
Okay.
I was a single parent. I was born in 1958.
I'm sorry to hear
we
that.
We had it rough in the 60s. We lived in backstreet houses, cockroaches a lot. And my dad was an alcoholic. And I'm telling you now, my mum never stole nothing. However, if she had to have, she would have. She worked three jobs. Now, trouble is, these days, there's peer pressure. Everybody's got everything nice. And you want your kids to have the best. And if you're... I don't know... I missed the start of this debate, so I don't know whether this lady's a single parent or what?
No, we didn't find out about that. I wasn't sure if being a single parent was relevant or not.
Well, it is because...
Tell me why.
If you're a single parent and you're trying to bring up a child, you get about £80. Now, you try making £80 last you a week, Ian.
Mm.
And paying your bills, and the man was wrong. You don't get all the money off the council tax.
No, I think you have to pay 20% now.
You do, yes.
Yeah, they
do.
Changed it, didn't they, last year?
Yeah, and...
What about the point that David makes in his emails, that you can ask friends and family to help you out with food for the kids and food banks?
What happens if she has no family?
Yeah.
And her friends are on benefits, or, you know, she may be a very shy person who... I've got two friends... You know, I stick with.
Is there a need? This is the thing.
In these days and ages, people don't have loads and loads of friends.
But it is 2014, and there are, and I know benefits are being cut.
And also, can I just make this point?
Go on, Maggie, yes.
Yes, there are food banks. Can you imagine the shame of having to go down there?
Oh, listen, if I
say I can't feed my child,
if I had to, if that was the only way I could feed my kids, then that I could swallow that shame quite well.
I know, but in 2014, we're the second richest country in the world. It shouldn't be happening.
I don't think we're the second. I think we're the sixth. Although someone disputed that last week and said
we're pretty close to the top.
We're not doing too badly. But in 2014, there have to be other alternatives. How can someone get so desperate that they have to go and steal? What about what May was saying?
At my age now, I have gone without food. I have literally had toast for 3 days because I'm disabled and on benefits. So that's how much the benefits help me. And my occupational therapist and physio and social worker applied for me to get a wet room and a conservatory built on the back of my house because I can't get up the stairs. And they says, yeah, you're on DLA, you can pay £22,000 towards it. How the hell are you supposed to do that?
But there will be some people listening, Maggie, who say, well, hang on, why should I pay for Maggie to have a wet room?
No, because I can't get in a bath. The shower is over the bath. So I had to have the bath taken out.
Oh, and as someone who's got a disabled mum and we looked at all the possibilities, I can understand exactly why you'd need that. But there will be people listening and thinking, hang on, why should we pay for Maggie to have a new...
All I wanted was the bath out and a flat floor.
Yeah, but
that's
but
all I asked them to do.
What would you say to the people who would dispute whether they should be paying for your...
I never wanted to give up work, Ian. I begged and begged and begged. Please don't make me give up work. I worked... I left school on a Friday, I started work on a Monday. I worked my whole life until the day they said, you cannot go to work, you are unemployable. You can't, that's it. I had to take retirement.
Maggie, I appreciate your call. Thank you very much indeed. 03453 009956. Wendy's on the line. This is another Wendy. Morning, Wendy.
Hello.
I'm going to call you Wendy number two, if that's all right. Don't think I'm being rude.
That's okay.
It's just because we had another Wendy call on. What do you think? Whose side are you on? Shan, who stole to feed her kids, or Wendy number one, who thought that Shan was disgusting?
Well, I don't agree that Shan is disgusting, but I do agree with Wendy. You know, we have lost the art of community spirit. We have lost the art of cooperation. And I blame the government. I do blame the government. Everyone is subservient to the government. It's ridiculous. We're all dependent on this money. We're all demanding more money from them. And no one knows how to do basic skills like growing your own food.
Well,
I
know exactly what you're saying there. And my little boys have a little vegetable patch in the back garden and they are growing their own food. But not everyone has access to a garden, do they? What are they going to grow?
Oh, come on, if you've got a plant pot, you know what I mean? Years ago, we all did it. You know, what Wendy was saying and the other lady that was on, my parents and my grandparents were farmers. That's small holding, nothing big.
Well,
just enough to feed themselves and trade with the neighbours.
They were farmers?
Yes.
Well, of course farmers are going to be able to grow food for themselves and a little bit to sell on.
But I'm talking about a small holding here, not a big
farm.
Where are people going to get...
And they're all gone. Now we've got commercial businesses, corporations and plastic nappies that we can't get rid of.
So where are
people... And docile people who don't just abuse the system.
I'm waiting to see if your voice can go any higher.
Sorry.
It was going... It got to a point where I think that sentence continued, but only dogs could hear what you were saying, Wendy. Not everybody... I hope she's laughing and not crying. Not everybody can... What, are you going to grow some potatoes on your windowsill?
Look, we could all do our bit. I'm saying if we were a part of a community, guerrilla gardening and things like this are kicking off all over the place.
Guerrilla gardening? What's that?
There's a place in Yorkshire, There's a village in Yorkshire, and everyone in that village grows their food. And it's there, free, on open ground for everyone in the village to have, to help themselves. They're not buying into corporate genetically modified crap that's ruining us, that's causing cancer in rats. Our food is poisonous for us in shops like Tesco.
Wendy, I'm detecting an accent.
I'm from Wales.
I'd guess. I'd pick that up. What on earth are you doing over here?
Working. I've been travelling the UK on community farms and things.
Oh, I see.
Learning how to get out of the system.
Oh,
not
I see.
To be dependent on the government.
But you live
everyone in us. We hate them, and the last thing we want to do is vote for the lesser evil. Stop voting. Don't vote at all. Anybody.
Hang on a second. Well, this is your phone.
Vote for yourselves and get out and learn how to plant a seed in the garden.
So your advice this morning is: don't vote for any political parties. Go out and plant some seeds.
Yes. Seeds, yes.
You know that sounds... Have you been drinking this morning? You know that sounds a little hippy-dippy. a little hippy-dippy. I notice you've still got access to a telephone.
Do you know what?
To a telephone.
We're losing Mother Earth. Call me a hippie, call me whenever you want, right?
Okay, people will be.
Call me early from bed.
There you, Wendy. Thank you very much indeed. Absolutely bonkers, but wonderful. Thank you, Wendy. 03453 009956. What do you reckon to what she was saying? That we need to have more community spirit. We need to be guerrilla gardening. I've never heard of that before. What? Well, you go and park in. You go and plant seeds in the local park and stuff, and grow the food. I don't know. 03453 009956. I could have spent the rest of the show talking to her and finding out her strange politics of opting out of the system. She's got a telephone. Not opted out that much. Richard's in Worcester. Morning, Richard.
Hello.
What would you like to say?
Well, I thought that woman, Wendy, the earlier Wendy, was having a bit of double standards there.
Wendy number one, who thought it was disgusting that another caller had stolen food and nappies for her children.
She said she would never, ever break the law, but she said, you'll have to go because I'm driving and I'm on the phone. may have been on a hands-free.
I'm hoping.
It didn't sound like a hands-free.
I'm hoping she was on a hands-free, because, of course, we wouldn't condone that sort of behaviour.
I'm driving, I'll have to go. If she was on a... On hands free, she wouldn't have to go in a hurry, would she? Maybe she's seen a policeman.
Maybe.
But saying she hadn't, she'd never break the law. But she's right, you know, stealing is wrong. Obviously doesn't understand some people's absolute desperation when they've had the benefits cut. They've already been down the settee, they've already searched the pockets for money, and they haven't got any, and they've got starving kids, you know. We become a lazy society, because we always use terry nappies, you know.
Mm.
And I'm talking about 30 years ago. Times change, you know.
Richard, what you've done is you have given me the question that I wish I had 45 minutes ago. We were struggling this morning, Joe, my producer, and I were struggling this morning to come up with the right question, and you've just given it to me. Can I fire it back and see if people respond?
Thank you for talking to me anyway.
Richard, off you go. Thank you very much. We were struggling to come up with the right question, and he's given it to me. Is stealing always wrong? Boom. There you go. That's it. Is stealing always wrong? Nice and simple. Is it always wrong? Is it ever justified? If my kids were starving and I'd been down the back of the sofa and I'd been in the spare pocket, the pockets of all my jackets, and I could not find a penny and I had no friends or relatives that could help me, and I'd used up my 3 visits to the food bank, I would go and steal. Simple. I wouldn't be proud of it. I hate myself for it. I'd be ashamed of it. But that's what I would go and do. Richard's brilliant. He's given us the question for this topic that I wish we'd had 45 minutes ago. Is stealing always wrong? 03453 009956.
Pen, Pensnet,
Rugeley, Redditch,
Rowley Regis.
Have your say across the West Midlands.
BBC WM 95.6.
Chloe's in Kidderminster. Morning, Chloe.
Hi, good morning.
What would you like to say?
Oh, gosh. I can't be angry about this debate, to be quite honest.
Go on, let it out, Chloe. Let it out.
Is the government to blame? Yeah, partly, because they've created this kind of generation that relies on systems. People were given the opportunity to claim benefits. It was easy to get stuck in that system, and now it's very difficult to get out of it. I hear the older generation who hear of anybody who's claiming benefits, they must be scroungers, they must be fiddling the benefit system. It's not the case, and it's really, really unfair, to be quite honest with you. 12 months ago, my partner had a heart attack, both working, got two kids, so obviously he couldn't go to work, claimed statutory sick pay. I had to take time off to look after him. I was made redundant about a week after. We'd got nothing. We were absolutely skinned. Would I have gone out and stolen food? Yeah, I would have done, most definitely. I hear people saying, you know, if you've got your benefits money, you're getting your house paid for, you should be able to budget your money. No, I'm sorry. It's absolutely impossible. Gas companies, if you haven't got a lot of money, you run up a big gas bill, you have a meter. So these are the poorest people who've got these gas meters, and they get stung for that gas.
They're paying the highest tariff, one of the highest tariffs.
They're paying the highest tariff. I've got a meter. I put £50, £60 a week in my gas meter to keep my house warm and to cook my food. And I think it's a total shame that all benefits people are labelled as lazy and scroungers. It's just not the case. Now, as I say, if I was in that situation and I'd got no food, I'd used up my three visits to the food bank, then what else can you do? What can you do about it? Nothing. You have to go out. You have to feed your family. Now, yes, stealing is wrong, but it's got to be done. If you've got to do it, you've got to do what you've got to do.
So in answer to the question that Richard unwittingly set up for us, is stealing always wrong? Your answer would be?
You've got to do what you've got to do. That's my answer. You shouldn't steal, but at the end of the day, you've got these big, massive supermarkets who are making millions in profits. Are they going to miss a few tins of beans? No, I don't think
I guess
so.
One of the arguments would be, and we hear, I don't know how true this is, but we hear this from the Tescos and the Sainsbury's and all these big supermarkets, that by people stealing, the prices are going up. So I'm being punished for other people stealing. That can't be right, can it?
No, maybe not. Maybe the prices are going up, but they're still making profits, aren't they? You know, they're still paying out bonuses and whatever else, so there are needy people in this country. There was a story in the paper today about a guy who died because of his benefits being cut. And when they found him, he was 5 stone. We shouldn't be living like a third world country.
Chloe, thank you very much. I'm just cutting you short because I want to squeeze in Gary before the travel. Thank you for that. Gary, what would you like to say?
I can fully understand both sides of the story, to be honest with you. I can understand that people get desperate. I was always brought up myself to never steal, and I never had. But I think one thing, there is a big issue out there. I think a lot of generations change, and there's a lot of young people who have children at a very, very early age. Should you actually have children if you can't afford to keep them in the first place? If you're on a life of benefits, should you be going out there having children? Because no one in today's age should have children if they can't afford them. And there's enough on the market there to stop people from having children.
What about the people who, through no fault of their own, they've got kids, and then they find that their husband's been taken sick and they've lost their job and then their stuff?
That's where the other side to the argument comes, isn't it? If you know, you're a perfectly solvent person who's had a level of income, and several years, 8 years down the line, you find yourself in that situation. That is a different argument. But I mean, I teach young people, and the amount of young people I teach, you know, I'm not here to judge anybody because everybody lives their lives differently. But a young girl of 21 having 3 or 4 children and has never worked in her life, it's hardly surprising she's going to be struggling.
Gary, I'm sorry to keep you so short. I hope you feel you got your point across. I think you did excellently. 03453 009956. Finally, after talking about this for about 50 minutes, we've managed to distill this down into one very simple question. Richard called up, and without knowing it, he came up with the perfect question that we were struggling to find this morning. Very simple. Is stealing always wrong? So, 03453 009956. In a few minutes, we'll be talking about bus passes for old people. Should all old people get bus passes? 03453 009956. I tell you the answer to that specific question. No. No. We'll discuss that in a minute. At the moment, we're asking, is stealing always wrong? There's been an increase in shoplifting. West Midlands Force has seen a rise of 11% in the number of shoplifting cases in the last year, with basics being taken as opposed to high value items. So it's things like beans, bread, milk, nappies. Bob Jones, the Police and Crime Commissioner for the West Midlands, blames it on the government, and he says, quote, he would be sorely tempted, unquote, if he were in that situation. So, is stealing always wrong? 03453 009956. Georgina's in Perry Bar. Morning, Georgina.
Good morning.
Georgina, what would you like to say?
Yeah, I'd just like to say that I work for one of the local benefit centres.
Yeah.
And I've processed benefits. And there are times when I've added up all the benefits that customers get in.
Yeah.
And it comes to more than what I earn. Now, would that be, do your listeners think it would be acceptable then for me to steal?
When you did those maths, how did that make you feel?
Pretty disgusted, really, because then that adds to the other question, is the government to blame? Partly, because nobody should ever be better off on benefits than working.
What benefits did they, and I don't know, you know what you earn, but what benefits did they have to get to earn more than you?
Well, it would have been a combination of the either income support or job seekers allowance, possibly disability living allowance. And then when I look at the other things that I have to pay for, rent, council tax, school meals, optical treatment, dental treatment, and everything else, it obviously means that some of these things they're either getting almost completely free or making a small contribution to. And then when I look at because of what I earn, I don't qualify for any of those things.
I signed on, I'm trying to do the maths, I was probably 22 to 20. I signed on for about 2 years.
Yes.
And I got my rent paid for, and I got, what was it called? Was it called Job Seekers Allowance then? Probably was.
Yeah.
And I think that was it. And it was for 2 years, and it helped me out. I couldn't have survived if I hadn't have had that money, and I wouldn't have ended up doing what I'm doing now if I hadn't have got that money for 2 years. Now, some people might say 2 years is too long, but I wanted to work. I kind of enjoyed dossing around a little bit, if I'm completely honest. But ultimately, I wanted to work. Don't most people who are claiming these benefits want to work?
Well, that's a kind of a double-edged sword. I would say the majority, yes. But then you get some people that I think, partly maybe because of the government, we have a saying sometimes, they've become institutionalised.
Yep.
They've never had to work, and because the benefit's always been there. And then I've had some people actually say to me, well, I'm worse off if I go to work. And it's hard to argue the point. Well, no, you're not. When sometimes they're actually correct.
Georgina, I'm going to ask you the question. Is stealing always wrong?
Is stealing always wrong? I would say no, it's not always wrong. It depends.
Yeah.
There are many numerous reasons as to why somebody may steal. Mm. And I suppose that's all got to do with it. It's the reasons why you're doing it. And sometimes it depends on who, it sounds really awful, but sometimes it depends on who you're stealing from. Are you stealing from a neighbour? Are you stealing from a relative? Are you stealing from a massive department store that obviously, that could possibly, not to say they could afford for people to come in and steal it all the time, it's the impact it has then and your reasons for doing it.
Georgina, thank you very much. There's a twist. Stealing's not always wrong. It can depend on who you are stealing from. 03453 009956.
The voice of Birmingham in the Black Country.
BBC WM
95.6.
Cracking calls, by the way, this morning. Thank you so much. Really appreciate it. And I know you'll want to talk about this as well. Local councils in England are warning that the free off-peak bus service entitlement for older and disabled residents could be in danger. They say that the money they receive from central government has been cut by over a third since 2010. One of the papers, I'm trying to find it, this is how badly organised I am. One of the papers says that we either cut the free bus pass or we cut other services. Simple question. Should we cut other services to pay for OAP bus passes? Should all old age pensioners get the free bus pass? 03453 009956. Joined by John O'Connell from the Taxpayers Alliance and also Sid Ashby from the West Midlands Pensioners Convention. Let's start with you, John. What do you think? Should all old age pensioners get the free bus pass?
Well, I think that's down to a question of priorities with the council. If they're having their funding reduced and if they want to carry on funding the service, then they should look for cuts elsewhere to pay for it. But, you know, when we're talking about making savings in the long term, I think we have to look at stuff like universal benefits for pensioners when, you know, let's be frank, some pensioners will be able to afford their own bus travel. And if they're getting a free bus pass regardless, then, you'd have to question whether that's a legitimate use of taxpayers' money.
See, John makes a good point, doesn't he, that some pensioners, they're quite well off and they don't need the free bus pass, so why should they get it?
They don't get it. That's the whole point. You may remember we had a big headline not too long ago about Sir Alan Sugar not needing a bus pass. I'm not sure that the papers printed his statement that A, he didn't have one, and B, he never applied for one. Not everybody applies for a bus pass. About, I think at the moment, the figures are about 8 out of 11 pensioners. But remember, the facts are that most of these benefits that has just been referred to arise because the government of this country has an inadequate pension system. Of the European 27 countries, we're about the fourth in the table as being the worse off. We have an inadequate pension to cover the sort of things that we're talking about. And in terms of the bus pass, the government subsidy is about £1 billion a year. It's a comparatively small bundle of the whole amount involved in old age pensions and so on. Half of the benefits paid by government, 47% of the whole bill, are for not benefits, but for the entitlement of the old age pension, which people contributed to through national insurance contributions through the whole of their working life. You know, these are the background facts that don't get talked about when people talk about taking bus passes away. People who can afford to pay generally don't apply for a bus pass. You know, it is a smokescreen, I think, for people who are wanting to, as it were, chip away at the welfare state and the benefits that people have built up over the years since 1948 that many people find we need because we have an inadequate pension system.
John, pensioners need the free bus pass.
Well, some might and some might not, but that's a question of spending priorities for the councils. I wish Sid was right. I wish that when people were paying into their taxes through so-called national insurance, that it was going into a pot to look after them in old age. But the truth is that that's, you know, hasn't been the case for many, many years now. National insurance is just another tax on people's earnings. It doesn't go into a pot to look after people in their old age. Whether it should or not, that's a completely different question that would be interesting for a whole other debate. But I wish that was the case. But, you know, if councils want to carry on paying for old age pensioners to use the bus, then absolutely fine. But that means that they have to make savings elsewhere.
Go on, Sid, please.
Can I just make a brief comment about that last item? The fact is that the National Insurance Fund, there is an annual report of the state of the National Insurance Fund, and for many years now, it has shown a massive surplus, which the government has borrowed for other purposes. It's perfectly true that the actual National Insurance Fund for the payment in pensions does more than adequately cover the needs of the pension.
Sid, would you agree that there are more important things that national insurance and tax money could be going towards as opposed to old people getting on the number 96 to pop down the shops or go and see their mates at the bingo?
what I would agree that the tax system certainly could be revised to cover a better system than we've got now. I mean, let's face it, when we see that bankers' arrangements being made to pay these enormous bonuses, and when they say we've got to alter the tax system, they get round it yet another way. That's where the big money goes, not out of small pensioners. Of the pensioners, don't forget, there are 250,000 of all that pay at the higher rate, whereas 6.4 million have an income below $10,500 and don't pay any income tax at all.
I've never quite understood, Sid, why pensioners should get free travel.
Well, one of the difficulties is that otherwise you finish up with higher bills for health and care, because if they're not getting out and about a bit, A, local shops suffer because they're not going to travel to do their shopping and so on, and B, you get more and more isolation and you finish up with more and more calls for National Health Service help from GPs and others because they're not getting out and about.
Sid, let me put that to John. It saves money on the NHS, and as a few tweeters have said this morning, it also stimulates business.
Indeed.
Yeah, perhaps it can get people down to the high street, but again, where's the money going to come from? And if we do want to fund these bus passes, then that means that we have to make cuts elsewhere because the money just isn't there. Sid made a good point about the tax system being so complicated. I completely agree with him. We need to simplify it so that everybody pays no more or no less than their fair share. But you know, we can't just blame bankers for this kind of debate that we're having. Look, councils are under pressure. They have to find ways to make sure that, you know, their reduced budgets are meeting the needs of their residents. And if the needs of their residents in their area are about, you know, providing free bus passes for pensioners, then fine. But that means that they have to make spending cuts elsewhere, and that's the reality.
Gentlemen, thank you very much. John O'Connell from Taxpayers Alliance. Sid Ashby from the West Midlands Pensioners Convention. Over to you. Where do you put free bus passes for old people in terms of priority? Are they the most important thing? Should other services be cut, as John has suggested that we would have to do, to maintain the free bus service, the free bus pass? What about, I don't know, playgroups, libraries? Are they more important? If you are a pensioner, do you need your bus pass? How much do you use it? Is it really that important? And should all old people get a bus pass? 03453 00956. You've been very, very busy on the phones this morning. Another hour to go. Oh, I've got a load of emails and texts. I'll do those in a little bit.
The voice
of Birmingham and the Black Country.
They have kids, they want somebody else to keep them.
Social services shouldn't exist.
I know quite a few people that have had pay cuts in their wages just to hang on to their job.
Ian Lee, Saturdays,
9 till 12.
BBC WM 95.6.
Thank you for that, Nicole. Morning, this is Ian Lee, BBC WM 95.6 here every Saturday morning between 9 and 12. And then at midday, of course, it's early kick-off with Daz Hale. No doubt he'll pop in at some point. I will struggle to find the right microphone, and then he'll talk about what's happening on the show. That tends to be the format. In the meantime, a quick recap. We've talked about grieving and about how your friends and your family can sometimes abandon you when someone's died and they don't know what to say. I've got lots of emails and texts, including one from Liz Saul, which I will read a little bit later on. We've spoken about, is stealing always wrong? More basic foodstuffs, nappies, beans, are being stolen because people can't afford to feed their families. Well, is stealing always wrong? But in the last 10 minutes, just before the news, we were talking about bus passes for old people. Do all old people deserve the bus pass, the free bus pass? How important is it to you? And are there more things that are actually more important? The bus pass subsidy that the government pays, it's a lot of money. It's about £1 billion, and it means that some other services are suffering. What do you think? Do all old people deserve the bus pass? 03453 00956.
Have your say.
Across the West Midlands, call 03453 00956.
BBC WM 95.6.
So, let's see who has been here the longest. It's John in Great Barr. Morning, John.
Morning, Ian. I trust you're well.
Do you know what? I'm all right. I'll tell you what I just said to my production team. During the news, I wolfed down a sandwich a little bit quickly, and apologies, I'm now a bit windy.
Well, you know what to do. Get some thingies down you.
Get some what down me?
The thingy down you. You know, the fizzy, the white powder in the water fizzes up. What? Straight down your neck, and it will pull.
What is that? But is that not bicarb? Is it Andrews?
I wasn't going to use the name.
But you can use. Do they still make Andrews? Do you know what? You've just taken me back to my nan's bathroom and her bathroom cabinet.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you for that. That's a really nice memory. Okay, I'll have some of that, and that'll get it all out, will it?
Yeah, as long as you bring it straight back. just get it down your neck, and then boom, within 30 seconds, you'll be burping all over.
Well, listen, okay, I know you want to talk about something quite serious. We'll get there in a second. John, I can't burp. I can't do it.
I can't. I have terrible trouble with trapped wind.
Yep.
And I have one of two cures first thing in the morning.
Go on. Oh, dear.
A glass of Andrews, or if I've run out, then a glass of ginger ale.
And that does it?
The ginger will irritate your bowel, and then up it comes.
Oh, ladies and gentlemen, I'm not going to apologise, because this is what makes this show so wonderful, I think, is that we can get people like John doing blow-off impressions. John?
No, it wasn't. It comes up through your...
Oh, it comes up the other way.
Yeah.
I'm going to treat myself to some Andrews today, and then when my kids are in bed and my wife is working tonight, I'm having an Andrews party, and everybody's invited.
I'll point at the most, because next morning you will suffer.
Now, John, on to more serious things. Yes. The bus pass, do you have one? How important is it to you?
Yes, well, I'm 69 years of age.
Yep.
Now, the problem is, my pension, I've just been informed, the government is going to grant me £2.88 per week increase.
Good for you. What are you going to spend it all on?
A big party.
Yeah, good for you.
My tax code has dropped from 303 to 281, which means I'm going to be paying more tax on a private pension. Huh. And because I live in a council sheltered accommodation, if the council use the same formula as they did last year, my rent will go up by around £9.60 a week. So my bus pass, to be quite honest, is a lifeline. That's the only way, because I live in Great Bar. My kids, I've got a couple of kids living in Old Church, and one living in Solihull. That's my grandkids, and I need to get to see them. But the point I'd like to make is, as far as I'm aware, the bus pass, you're allowed to apply it. You used to be 60, maybe 62 now, but that retirement age is 65 or 66. So why are people, being allowed, if they're working, to get the bus pass?
Do we... listen, and it does sound like it's important, but there are other services that may suffer because you're getting a bus pass. John, is you being able to pop down to the bingo and pop down to the shops really the best use of taxpayers' money?
Well, as I say, I'm travelling from Great Bar to Old Church and Great Bar to Solihull. Now, I worked it out one day that if I was going to go to Old Church and pay the full amount, it would cost me about £11. Now, that's £11 just on one day.
Yeah.
To Solihull, it'd be about £9.60. So I'm paying an extra £20 a week out of my pensions to go and see my grandchildren. And I left school at 15. I've worked all my life, never been out of work, paid all my taxes, paid all my national insurance. The council basically have put the noose around their own neck when years ago they should have paid the equal pay to the women. But because they didn't, they're now in the mire. And because they're in the mire, they're grabbing people by the throat and saying, you can't have this, you can't have that. I mean, if I can just quickly mention, my brother lives in a council place, he's disabled, and he wants a wet room. Now, they said, yes, we'll do it, but you've got to pay for it.
Yeah, we had another caller saying a similar thing.
Yeah, well, he's on a pension which is less than mine, because he does struggle to get in and out of the bath. He can't even have a shower, because where his flat is, he's in a two-storey block, and he's on the top floor. So even being a qualified electrician, and he did put my shower in before he retired, he can't get to the electrics, because there is a loft, but he just can't get into it.
John, thank you very much. for that. And it's always good to speak to another sufferer of an affliction that I don't think many people are aware is so damaging, being unable to belch. Can't do it. I cannot do it. I was so envious of the kids at school that could burp the alphabet or burp swear words. When I get really... should I tell you this? Yeah, I'm going to, because I feel that we're getting closer. I might disgust you. When I really, really need to burp, when I really need to, do you know what I do to make it happen? Ugh. I have to put two fingers down my throat and waggle. So I'm so sorry. Gosh, I think one of the team has fainted. I'm sorry. And not so that I throw up. I don't want to throw up. But so that, you know, the trapped air comes out. It's a medical condition. I'm sure if I went for the assessment, I could probably get a blue badge. I'm sure I could. 03453-009956. Ted's in Kidderminster. Morning, Ted.
Good morning, mate.
Ted, what?
Ian,
yes,
I'm sorry.
That's okay.
I've got your second name.
Hey,
first.
Listen, don't worry. They're both strong names. What can you do for us?
Well, it's about the bus pass.
Yes.
The thing about it is when I see how many are on the buses, if it wasn't for the pensioners, the buses would be running empty.
Yeah, but they're not...
So why run a service that nobody uses? We might just do all utilise everything that's being done at the moment and clogging the roads up and what have you, and fill the buses up, let the people... Another thing is a pensioner can't afford to have £50 worth of groceries delivered from these great supermarkets each time.
No.
So therefore, how are they going to get the bit of food? So therefore, just look how much the supermarkets are going to lose. Why don't they chip in some money? Because they're some of the biggest beneficiaries from pensioners
Hang on
buses.
Ted, why should Tesco and Sainsbury's and Lidl pay towards old people going on the bus? That's crazy talk.
It isn't. Of course it isn't crazy. When you look at their balance sheets, the millions that they make,
but why
the amount of stores that they open.
But why are old people being able to pop on the bus to go and see their mates and go to the bingo? Why has that got anything to do with Waitrose?
Well, what do you want to do? Do you want to lock all the old people over 65 up in one great workhouse?
Sometimes I do.
Yes, I know you do. You haven't got much sympathy towards the old people.
I've got plenty of sympathy to old people. I will be one day.
Yeah, well, I'm 83.
Yeah.
And I've got a lot of sympathy for old people. But anyway, we'll drop that subject. The other one is about stealing.
Yeah, go on.
There are two categories that steal. Yeah. I was a supermarket manager, so I was in my working life. I was told this. There are two kinds that steal.
Yeah.
Two kinds of people.
Yes.
One is the needy, which is a great shame and a social blot, if you like. And the other is the needy and the greedy. The greedy I had no time for at all. In fact, we caught one woman in my store when I was there, and the detectives went through her bags and found a passbook for a building society with 55,000.
Well, it certainly is greedy. Ted, you're a good sport. I'm just cutting you off because I just want to squeeze in Bill in Northfield before we go to the travel. Morning, Bill.
Good morning.
Should all old people get the bus pass?
Yes. Even if you're disabled, like
yeah,
me,
yeah.
I'm 69. Now I've got a disabled car, but if that breaks down, I need that bus pass. So, you know, and also, let me just quote something to you, because I got this morning, come through pension credit booklets, right?
Yeah, go on.
It says here, this is a benefit for people under 65 need a lot of help or personal care because of physical or mental illness or disability. Now, you know, that's disability living allowance. Well, whether you're under 65 or you're over 65, you're still disabled, aren't you?
Well, if you're disabled, yes.
Yeah,
what about
but you can't get it. But if you're over 65, you can only get that disability living allowance if you're under 65. You don't understand what I mean?
I do, Bill.
But you're still 65, you're still disabled.
Bill, very quickly, what about rich pensioners? Should they get a bus pass?
Well, no, not if you've got too much money.
What's the cut-off point? What would you say was too much money?
Say, for instance, if you've got a quarter of a million or something like that, you don't need it.
Because you've got... Bill, thank you very much. Thanks for your good point. And it is that thing, if you say, well, yeah, the wealth... I know you have to apply for the bus pass. But still some wealthy people do. If you're going to put in a limit, they're saying, well, no, if you're too wealthy, you can't have a bus pass. Well, then what is that limit? Quarter of a million? Some might think that's a lot. Too much. Well, 100,000 then. Well, what about 75? If you got £50,000 in the bank, should you get a bus pass? I don't know. 03-453-009956. It's a quarter past 11. Let's get the travel news now. Here's Liz. I don't want you to do it now, Liz.
Okay.
But can you burp?
Yes.
You can.
It's not a very ladylike thing to do.
I bet you can do it like a docker.
Yeah, probably.
I'm jealous of you because I'm jealous of you because I can't. That's what I was talking about. Okay. I can't burp. I can't.
Everyone can.
No. Oh.
I mean, it might sound a bit feeble, no. But everyone can.
No. This is it. Not everyone can. I can't.
Really?
I can't do a forced burp. You know, where people can burp the alphabet. But
yeah,
I also, no. if I get trapped wind, I gotta suffer with it, Liz. It don't come out.
There is a way around that.
Go on.
Well, apparently you should put your opposite hand over your opposite shoulder and pull it towards you. So you put your left hand over your right shoulder and pull your shoulder towards you,
so
forward.
Hang on, so you're winding yourself like you're the baby?
Yeah, exactly. There you go.
I'm trying to do it. That wouldn't... Really?
You have to keep doing it, yeah.
Oh, Liz, you're
terrible. That was what my grandma used to tell me.
Okay.
It worked on me.
I'm going to have a go at that, Liz. Thank you very much indeed. Doing some very, very powerful dancing to the music there. Morning, this is Ian Lee, BBC WM 95.6. We've spoken about some very serious issues this morning. Let's have a quick recap, shall we? Let's set up the stall. First hour, we spoke about what happens when someone in your family passes and your friends and your relatives don't know what to say to you. Second hour, we spoke about, is stealing always wrong? More and more parents are stealing basics to feed their kids. Some very touching stories there. The last 30 minutes. Should all old pensioners get a free bus pass? Some really powerful calls about the impact that bus passes have on their lives. Now we're talking about burping. Marie's in Cozy. Morning, Marie. I know, isn't it? I feel kind of guilty, but...
Subject.
Go on, what do you want to say about burping? I can't do it.
I can't burp.
Can you not?
No. I know exactly how you feel. Trap wind is the bane of my life.
And it's agony, isn't it?
It is. The girl that you had on Just gave a theory from her nan, and that's what I was going to phone in about. I saw an interview with Bruce Forsyth. And he said about burping, which is ridiculous.
Yeah.
But he did say you put your left arm up over your right shoulder, lean over.
Yeah. I'm doing
and
it.
And you can burp. And I've tried it and it does work.
Hey,
it's
this
like
is
burping a baby.
This is so exciting. So can Bruce Forsyth not burp then?
Well, I saw him on Jonathan Ross or something and he was saying, I don't know why, but he gave that solution and I've tried it and you have to keep going at it, but it does work.
How long do you have to sit there kind of yanking yourself off before you can burp?
Well, a few times. I'm doing it now. It's a bit like exercise. You keep going. And then eventually, but I'm so jealous of people that can burp. My sister can burp the alphabet, people's names.
I hate your sister. I hate those people that can do... There is nothing funnier when you are 14 years old, or indeed when you're 40 years old like me, than someone burping swear words.
Yeah, my sister can still do it. Oh. She's in her 50s. I can't. It's ridiculous.
Marie...
And I'm sitting there full of wind, trapped wind. It's vile.
Marie, thank you very much for your honesty. I think there's something here. We need to start a movement. Well, we do need to start a movement. We can't move. We can't do a movement. That's the problem. I'm going to start up a charity and a support group for people that can't burp. I'm looking at Daz Hale in the next studio. I bet he can belch. I bet he can do it like a trooper. Can you burp, Daz? Yeah. He's giving me the thumbs up and a little wink. 03453 00996 is the Toy Game Loads of Calls on burping. I'm so sorry. We've got slightly more important things. Let me press this button to kind of as a little natural break.
Darlaston,
Edgbaston,
Erdington,
Baisley,
Gornal Wood, have your say across the West Midlands.
BBC
WM 95.6.
Now, on to slightly more serious things, and I think that a lot of you will want to have your say about this. I've got Ed Miliband is on my television now. He's putting his fingers together in a kind of evil sort of way, and he's pulling his hands apart, and he's walking. That shows he's sincere. That shows he's sincere. Well, the Labour Party is holding a special conference this morning to vote on changes to its links with the trade unions. Leader Ed Miliband wants union members to opt in to join the party rather than to be automatically affiliated through their annual subscriptions. Well, it could mean that the Labour Party could lose millions of pounds in union funding, but he hopes it'll boost membership. So is Labour now out of touch with working class people? We can speak to Dave Nellis, member of the Socialist Party and former West Midlands Labour MP, and James Bloodworth, editor of the blog Left Foot Forward. Good morning to both of you.
Good morning.
Dave, we'll start with you. Labour, is it out of touch with working class people?
I think that's been developing for some time. I mean, this proposal, which they're taking 120 minutes of conference time to overturn 113 years of shared history of the unions, is put forward as if it's going to triple Labour's membership and make them more popular amongst voters. But the reality is that the members they've lost, and they've lost about a quarter of a million members during the lifetime of the last Labour government, 97 to 2010, and about 5 million voters, didn't leave because they thought the unions had too much influence. They left because they didn't like the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan, or PFI and privatisation, or the rich getting richer. They left because of policies, and this isn't going to change that.
James, what do you think? Labour, out of touch with working class people? James?
To be honest.
You're there.
Hello,
yes, sir, I've got you there. Yes, sir, go on.
Yeah, I think the political establishment as a whole is rather out of touch with working people. But I don't think these reforms necessarily mean that any more than any other reforms. In fact, is it going to make the Labour Party more democratic, or isn't it? And I think the opt-in measure, so people aren't automatically enrolled, so they know what they're doing, they have a choice to opt into the party, I think that is more democratic. So in that sense, I think it's a good thing.
Is it going to attract more support for Labour and more voters?
We don't know, but at this point, there could be an issue with funding, certainly. But at the same time, Labour's going to have to work harder to win those trade unionists over. I don't think this point has been emphasised enough. People they can't take those people for granted anymore. They're going to have to go out of their way to appeal to those working people and come up with policies which do appeal to them. So it may actually help the left in that respect.
Doing a show like this, James, I get calls from so many different people who say that the Labour Party, they're a bunch of millionaires, they've all been to private schools, whereas 30, 40, 50 years ago, the Labour Party, it was more of a working man and working women's party, wasn't it?
Yeah, definitely. And but it's not just politics. You've seen this right across. You see it in media. Journalism is almost exactly the same. You see it in lots of professions where there's a lack of meritocracy, and it's just reflected. It's simply reflected in politics as well.
Dave, if Labour go back to a slightly more socialist direction, they're not going to get the votes, are they? They'll never get back in power.
Well, don't worry about that, because I don't think there's any chance at all about the current leadership of the Labour Party turning the clock back 30 or 40 years to when I was a member. I mean, when I was a member of the Labour Party in the 70s and the 80s, they used to give you a certificate or a badge if you recruited 10 or 20 people. This process this morning has arisen out of the chair of one union, Unite in Scotland, recruiting 80 of his fellow workers at the Grangemouth oil refinery to be individual members of the Labour Party. Now, the police were sent in. This process of distancing itself from Labour, it's part of a process it's accelerated under Tony Blair, but it began before that. John Smith in the early 1990s, then Tony Blair and Gordon Brown. Labour has become one of the three alternative, austere austerity parties nationally. And I think you're right when you say you're getting people phoning in saying that they can't really tell the difference now between the big parties. And I think there should be a difference. And I'm now working, for example, the Socialist Party is working with the RMT, the Transport Union, the union that actually founded the Labour Party 113 years ago, to start afresh. And this May, we'll be standing over 600 candidates in the May elections. So in every town and city, not only in the region, but in the country, there'll be a genuine alternative at election time of people who don't believe in austerity up against all them big three parties who do.
James, where do you position Labour at the moment? Do you think they're struggling, or do you think they're kind of doing okay and things like this will help?
No, I think they're struggling. I can remember the big days of the poll tax, March 1990, literally 24 years ago, and on the eve of that big demonstration in London and in Glasgow, Labour were 26 points ahead in the opinion polls. Such was people's hatred of the current Prime Minister Margaret Thatcher and the poll tax in particular. Yet 2 years later, they lost the 1992 general election. Now, Labour at the moment is something like 3, 6, 7 points ahead in the opinion polls because people can't see any substantial difference between them and the Tories. When you get Rachel Reeves saying that she'll carry out the same welfare reforms than the Tories, in fact, be tougher than the Tories on welfare, or Ed Balls and Ed Miliband saying they're going to carry out the same public spending cuts as George Osborne has already planned for 2015-2016, what's the incentive if people go out and vote for one of a different party that's going to just attack them in the same way as the others?
James, Dave makes a good point, doesn't he, that there's hardly, you could hardly squeeze a cigarette paper between some of the policies of Labour and Conservatives.
I think the closer you look, I think there are some real differences. But I do think the question of austerity, I think this is a much bigger issue. For example, the confines of political debate are much narrower now than they perhaps were in the past. So, for example, say as opposed to austerity, you wanted to pay the deficit down by taxing the rich more, something I'd, in principle, be in agreement with. It's much more difficult to do that now because we live in a globalised economy, the rich are more mobile, companies and people can simply relocate overseas. So the confines within which the debate's taking place are a lot more confined than they were in the past. And I think it's a case of the left is still getting to grips with that.
Chaps, thank you very much indeed. Dave Nellis, member of the Socialist Party, and the last voice you heard there was James Bloodworth, editor of the blog Left Foot Forward. So, dear listener, over to you. What do you reckon? Is Labour out of touch with working class people? It's popped up every now and then on this show and other shows I've done phone-ins on that people say Labour doesn't speak for them, doesn't represent them, doesn't do anything for them anymore. It's a bunch of millionaires. They're out of touch. And Ed Miliband today saying he wants union members to opt in rather than automatic affiliation. Is that another nail in the coffin of Labour's working class credentials? 03453 009956. Vivian's in Burton-on-Trent. Morning, Viv.
No, I don't think it is a nail in the coffin.
Go on, tell me why.
At one time, if there was an election on years ago, this is back in history, you had to vote for the employer's party. If you didn't, you hadn't got a job. And this is a similar thing. Why should you join an organisation, a union or whatever, and be compelled to support a political party which they support? Why can you not have freedom of speech, which is what this country is about, by letting people choose to join the party or not? They are giving people a voice, and I do believe the people will use that voice in favour of whichever party they want, most probably the Labour Party, because they are in the union which supports the Labour Party.
But the Labour Party has always been so closely associated with trade unions. Do you think that some trade union members might feel that they're being abandoned?
No, they're being given the freedom of choice.
Viv, I appreciate your call. Thank you very much indeed. No doubt we're going to be inundated with calls on this before the end of the show, so now is an excellent time to give us a call, 03453 009956. Is Labour out of touch with working class people? Mark's in Dudley. Mark, good morning, Mark.
Morning, how are you?
Yeah, I'm good, thank you very much, Mark. What have you got for me? What do you want to talk about?
I just wanted to make a comment about the pensioners and these bus passes.
Oh, yeah, go on. Do you think all old people should get bus passes?
I firmly believe that life is all about negotiation. You have to give and you got to take, yeah? And yep. I understand the pensioners' arguments of they grew up in hard times just after the war, and to a certain degree, they shouldn't have to live in hard time as they go towards their twilight years. I understand that, yeah?
Yep.
Also, the bus pass that they have is not a fantastic bus pass. It's one of these off-peak bus passes that starts at 9:30 or something like that and finishes at 3:30, so they can't use it after or before those hours, yeah?
Yeah.
So, we've got to raise the revenue for it, yeah? So, as life is all about give and take, why don't we take the pensioners out of the exemption banding for the spare bedroom tax?
Oh, go on.
So they have to pay the bedroom tax, yeah? And also, I'm led to believe that pensions are actually related to the rate of inflation. And I don't think any other benefits actually are related to the rate of inflation, yeah? So, we give them a set amount which isn't related to the rate of inflation. Also, we take them out, we put them in the bedroom tax bracket like everybody else has to pay, yeah? And then that revenue that's generated, we can give them a full bus pass that they can use 7 days a week when the services are running, and anything left over, we can get back to free TV licenses for them and things like that.
Now, there's some bits of that I agree with. Now, you know the reason that old people, pensioners, are exempt from bedroom tax, don't you?
I'm led to believe, well, if you read all the party rhetoric, it's because it's the biggest part of the voting public.
Yeah, it's because it's the biggest part of the voting public, and they the majority of them vote Tory. So exactly. the Tories don't want to upset them. So they've kind of said we'll stop it at 65.
Yeah, yeah.
But it feels like if you're going to be unfair to one party, you should be unfair to all of them, you know. And if exactly. people are going to struggle because of the spare room subsidy, then maybe old people should be included in it as well.
Well, I don't think it's so much a struggle as such, yeah. And I understand that these you're going to be bombarded with telephone calls now saying, "Oh, how can you say that? Blah de blah de blah." I understand that these pensioners have worked all their working lives, but unfortunately, the pot of money that they've put into isn't for them; it's for the generation before them. So they pay for their mom and dad's healthcare.
Yeah.
I now, as a working person, am paying for the pensioners' healthcare and things like that. Yeah, so we need. I think it was Orwell who said all people are equal, but some are more equal than others. Do you know what I mean? Yeah, and I think that's the route we need to go down.
Mark, I appreciate your call. Although I'm not sure everybody listening will have appreciated it. What do you reckon? Mark thinks, yeah, give pensioners bus passes. Give them better bus passes, 7 days a week, 24 hours a day. Although why an old person would want to go on a night bus, I don't know. Why would any human being want to go on a night bus? Apart from to feel the air of tension, listen to someone playing music from their telephone and smell marijuana as it's being smoked upstairs. He says, yeah, give them bus passes, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, but we cut the tie between pension and inflation, and we include old people in the bedroom tax. Aha! Suddenly, it's not quite so appealing, is it? 03453 009956. Mark, what do you reckon? You agree with him, or do you disagree with him? Mo's in Tamworth. Morning, Mo.
Good morning, Ian. Before I say what I want to say, I'd like to say that, you know, my licence fee alone is worth programmes like this.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, I thought you were going to have a pop at me then for a second. I was stealing myself for abuse.
Well, that might come later.
You're very kind, Mo. Thank you.
You're welcome. There's that many things this morning that are so interesting. And I don't know where to start.
Okay, I know where to start. Can you burp?
No.
You can't do it?
No, I'm on your team.
See, there are more of us than I thought.
Well, I don't care about that. I think that's disgusting.
Oh, come on. You must admit you're jealous when you see people that can belch.
I have
Ian.
Yes.
Beautiful looking daughter.
Oh.
In every way possible.
Yeah.
And she is the greatest burper on this planet.
Does she get that from her dad?
She must have.
Yeah, she must have. Good for her.
She can do better than him. She can do better than anybody. She can do it anytime, anywhere, on demand.
Good for her.
Yes.
What else have you got for me, Mo?
What I've got is, Ian, it's to do with... Oh, I forgot.
Bus passes? Is it to do with bus?
Yes.
Is it? Go on.
No. It's bus passes and whether it's right or wrong to steal.
Oh yeah, go on. Is stealing always wrong?
No, it's not always wrong.
Tell me why.
I'll tell you why. It's because I don't know whether you'll get this because it's a bit off track.
Oh, go on. I like off track. Yeah.
Prior to the MP's expenses, I would have said stealing was wrong.
Yeah.
But when that was all revealed and disclosed, and we all found out the extent of the MP's expenses, I've never got over it. You know, I know I'm grown up and I should have got over it, but I've never got over the greed. The greed of these people who are so well paid.
Duck houses, flat screen TVs.
Second mortgages.
Yeah, oh yes.
John Lewis furniture.
Oh, gardeners, wonderful.
Central heating for stables. Travelling first class, which the question should be today, as far as travelling is concerned, why should MPs travel first class when we are debating at the moment to take bus passes off elderly people? There's a discrepancy there.
Well, this is where we may fall out, Mo. I think MPs should travel first class.
MPs or ministers?
Both. Because they can sit on I have had the luxury of occasionally travelling first class on train. Sometimes it's only 15 quid to upgrade. And I think, oh, I'm going to treat myself because you get a free cup of tea. And it's great.
They get expenses first class automatic. Yeah.
No, I know.
You've got to work at that.
I know, but it's quiet in there. They've got... This is the thing that blew my mind. They've got plug sockets in first class so you can plug your laptop in. They've got plug sockets on a train. How does that work?
Hang on a minute. Some of these MPs are travelling 15, 20 minutes.
Yeah, but it means they can sit down in peace and quiet. They can think about what they're going to talk about. They can type up. They can do their emails on the train without having some snotty kid, you know, sitting next to them, looking over their shoulder, some horrible old bloke over the opposite side drinking from a can of Tennent's.
That snotty kid has got parents, grandparents, and other family members that probably vote for him.
But imagine if you were at work, Mo, and you had to sit opposite, maybe you do, you had to sit opposite some old smelly bloke who was drinking from a can of Tennent's and you had a snotty kid looking over your shoulder. You couldn't do it, could you?
I don't think situations like that occur these days.
On trains?
Most people on trains are polite.
No, Mo. No, Mo. No, Mo, no. No, Mo. Mo, no. I like you. Do you want to go out for lunch after this?
Yeah, I'd love to. Where are we going?
I know a great little French restaurant called McDonald's.
Oh, no.
I've got some vouchers
Excuse
for it somewhere.
Me.
Yes?
This is where we part company.
Oh dear. How rude.
Yeah. Up front, but, you know, if you want to say rude, that's okay.
I want to say rude. Have you got anything else, or shall I let you go?
Have I got anything else? No.
I'll be with you in a second, Martin. I'm just working out if Mo's got anything else to say.
No, you know what? I haven't, because I can't think straight, because you're making me laugh. And when I laugh, I lose track.
Shall we... Martin, you see what I have to deal with, Martin?
Yes, of course.
People like this. Mo, shall we continue this discussion next week?
Okay.
Nice to talk to you. Take care.
You too.
And say my love to your daughter, who can burp like a trucker. Martin, you've called in about burping as well, haven't you?
Yes, it always works from and it's Indian tonic water.
Oh, it's a horrible drink, though, isn't it?
Yeah, but make sure it's chilled. It's like, you know, not room temperature, so it becomes a bit sickly. But if it's at the fridge, nice and fresh, you don't sip it. Knock it back,
and
then wait for the results.
And then it's like a volcano erupting, is it?
Oh yes, you will jump for joy.
The few times I've burped, and my technique is unpleasant. I have to put my fingers down my throat and waggle. But the few times that has worked, the feeling of relief in my stomach and in my chest and in my head, it's just incredible, isn't it?
Yeah, If the tonic water doesn't work, then there is one last resort. People might frown or laugh at this. It's a pint of cider.
Oh, that's your excuse for being a drunk, is it? I'm drinking it for medicinal purposes, my love.
Yeah, well, what happens is if you don't have to have a pint, try a half, because as long as it's cider and it's chilled, it should do the trick.
Martin, thank you very much indeed. Am I right in thinking that Indian tonic water is it's to stop malaria? It's to stop the mosquitoes biting you, isn't it? It's got quinine in. Quinine. That's why tonic water is different from Indian tonic water, because Indian tonic water has got quinine in. So if you drink that, supposedly they won't bite you. And also if you eat Marmite as well. I love a bit of Marmite. We were having a Marmite porn conversation earlier on before the show. We were just Joe, my producer, and myself indulging ourselves in our Marmite fantasies. Love Marmite. Let's go to Derek in Droitwich. Good morning, Derek.
Good morning.
On the subject of Labour, it's kind of loosening their ties with trade unions. Ed Miliband wants union members to opt in to join the party. What are your thoughts on that? Has Labour lost touch with working class people?
Well, seeing as I was a member of the National Executive of Amicus, I believe that he certainly wants us to. The unions to lose control, but he still wants the unions to give him money.
Right.
The unions, if you take the history of it, the unions were formed first and they needed a political voice. That was the Labour Party, formed by the unions. That is where we come from. As the Tories come from the rich lords and so-and-sos, that's where they come from. The simple thing is that Miliband, He's really a soft Tory. I mean, the old party, I've sat there with MPs, and, you know, I'm a member of your union. They've got about 10 cards when we used to have that many unions in the pocket, just to show. There are only two Labour people that I would say that speak genuinely, and I don't know the new ones, so, but mainly they're just bootlickers and backside kissers. He's Wedgwood Benn and Denny Skinner.
Yeah.
So two old men that I can turn round.
What, Tony Benn?
Tony Benn.
Yeah. Can I ask a question, Derek, that I hope isn't improper? When working for the BBC and other news outlets, we have, on file, we have tapes and packages for when people die. So if the Queen were to die today, we wouldn't have to do anything. We'd just hit a button and a pre-recorded package would go out and people paying tribute to her. The same thing happened when Nelson Mandela died. Now, I'm going to ask a question. Did Tony Benn die last week? Or did I...
I hope not.
No,
if he has died, I'm ever, you know...
No, I know he's very, very poorly. And someone mentioned Tony Benn being very ill last week and mentioned the Obit package. Have we got the Tony Benn Obit package? And I couldn't remember if he had passed or we were just preparing.
Well, I read the Morning Star, and I haven't seen anything.
Okay, then hopefully he's still alive, because he's an excellent character.
The last time I seen him, he did look ill. That was on television.
I heard an incredible interview with him on Radio 4 about 2 months ago. He is very, very poorly. And he was talked about facing death. And it was an amazing interview. He was so honest and open about it.
He's a great bloke. And so is Denny Skinner.
Derek, listen, I'm going to let you go because I'm running out of time. I appreciate your call. I don't think Tony Benn is dead, actually. And I'm sorry if I've caused any distress. He's not, is he? No. No, we just had one of those conversations. And whatever you think of Tony Benn's politics, he's a brilliant character. I remember Ali G doing him. And he totally went along with it. He knew he was being wound up a bit. He knew he was having a laugh. But he was very, very funny. Right, 03453-009956. Last 15 minutes of the show. Let's get the travel news with Liz.
Thank you very much, Ian.
You're very welcome, Liz. I've not had time.
Here we go again.
No, we don't go nowhere. I've not had time to read your email. I've read it, but I've not had time to read it out on the air.
And that's all right.
But I don't want you to think that, you know, I've got loads of emails I haven't read.
Well, no, that's fair enough. And to be honest, I only take any notice of what you're saying about three times an hour. So I appreciate that you might have done it when I wasn't listening.
Oh, no, What I mean was, we read your email and we had lots of great feedback about it. So thanks very much for that.
Really?
No. Yes. Go on. No. What's happening?
You're a terrible liar.
Naughty.
That was brilliant news. Thank you.
Ooh, now you're easy.
This is the voice of Birmingham
and the Black Country,
BBC WM
95.6.
Do you know what? I am going to read a few of these emails. Let me find Liz's email because she took the time to get in touch. We're talking about what happens when people die. What do you say to people when they die? What do you say to friends and relatives? Not the dead people, obviously. The friends and relatives. How do you deal with it? And we've got lots of stories from you about people turning their backs in your hour of need. Well, Liz emailed him. Liz Hall, of course, the travel, says, my maternal grandparents died 12 years ago this year, within 4 months of each other. Very hard on my mum. She's an only child. She says you never quite get over something like that. As time goes on, you just learn to deal with it better. And that's the thing. You never forget when your parents have died, and to have it happen within 4 months of each other, ouch. I mean, that's incredible. You never forget. It gets easier, but there's still that... There's still that kind of gap in your chest. There's a hole there that you can't... You know, a vacuum has been created. And I've got one email here from... It's a text from Dave in Lichfield on shoplifting. We're asking, is stealing always wrong? David says, I'm a manager with a medium-sized supermarket. In the last 6 months, we've lost close to... Is this right? £10,000 through theft. £10,000 in 6 months. It's a daily battle to catch people stealing a few bits here and there, plus the career shoplifters. Ah, dearie me. Last 10 minutes of the show. If you want to have a say, then please do. 03453 009956 is the telephone number. On the subject of bus passes, it's Sue. Morning, Sue.
Good morning, Ian.
What do you reckon? Should all old people get bus passes?
Well, you know, it annoys me, because every time there has to be local cuts, they seem to hit the elderly and the disabled first. And I think it's wrong, because a lot of these elderly people live on their own. They won't see anyone if they can't get out on the bus, which will lead then to them becoming depressed. And I just think it's wrong. Why not suggest to the elderly people that they pay a token amount each year towards a bus pass?
Like what? Go on.
Let's say £50.
Yeah, that's not going to go any way towards covering it, though, is it?
Well, I know that, but at least it's something, you know. They're not realising that these elderly will be so depressed not being able to get out and about. It just so annoys me.
But the thing is, you say it's the elderly and the disabled that seem to be affected first. Having done shows like this, where I'm talking to people every day, everybody's being affected. And in some ways, Sue, the elderly are protected. We were talking about how they're not affected by the spare room subsidy, the bedroom tax. So in some ways, they're actually protected.
Yeah, I understand that, Ian, but what are we going to end up with? A lot of people, elderly people, who, I'm afraid some of them, will end up just ending their lives because they'll become so depressed. What you've got to realise is a lot of these people don't have families. So the only way they get to see people is by going out on the bus.
Sue, I appreciate your call. Thank you very much indeed. We've got 10 minutes of the show. There might be time to squeeze you in if you want to give me a call. 03453 009956. But before midday, let's get this in, shall we? The former Guantanamo Bay detainee, Mozambeg, has appeared in court, charged with Syria-related terror offences. Well, why are we talking about it? Well, of course, because 45-year-old Beg is from Hall Green in Birmingham, and he was arrested along with three others on Tuesday. He's charged with providing terrorist training and funding terrorism overseas. A 44-year-old woman, Geri Tahari from Sparkbrook, is charged with facilitating terrorism overseas. Two other men arrested remain in police custody. Meanwhile, a demonstration against the arrests is being held this lunchtime outside the West Midlands Police Headquarters. Our special correspondent Peter Wilson is there. Peter, what's going on now?
Good afternoon. Well, that protest is actually due to start just after noon and continue until 2 o'clock this afternoon. But already there are some 30 people from various organisations who are gathered outside. I can see in front of me one young man with a placard and he's gaffer-taped his mouth. A lot of friends and supporters of Mozambique angry at his arrest by West Midlands police. But in the early hours of this morning, they revealed that that last night, that Mozambique, along with a 44-year-old woman from Sparkbrook, had been charged with Syria-related terrorism offences. People, this is a very peaceful protest in front of the police headquarters. Earlier on, I've seen a number of police vehicles. The siren that you just heard there was from an ambulance. There are buses going past. But certainly a lot of people going to be gathering here. They were expecting some from London, but because Mozambique appeared in court in London, I understand that London people are not coming to Birmingham today.
Mozambique appeared in court this morning. What more can you tell us about that?
Well, of course, Mozambique is the former Guantanamo Bay detainee. He had been arrested by the Americans. He's never been charged with any offences. But this morning, he appeared at Westminster Magistrates Court, charged with Syria-related terror offences. He's denied those charges, and he's next going to appear in court at the Old Bailey on March the 14th. Now, I understand his legal team did not apply for bail. He is being held in custody, and this protest will continue for the next few hours.
Peter Wilson, thank you very much indeed.
In Lee.
On BBC WM.
95.6.
The voice of Birmingham and the Black Country.
Now, as I can tell by looking at you.
Hello.
You are the kind of fella that can belch at the drop of a hat.
I could.
I'm not asking you to say that.
I could, it has been known.
I would like us both to be working here next week, so I'm not going to ask you to do it. I hate people like you. I can't do it.
You can't. No.
Can't do it.
Get a nice bottle of fizzy pop.
Don't work. Dang, I just end up feeling. I can only do it, and it's horrible. I can only do it if I put my fingers down my throat.
Or
waggle.
If you were like, hang on.
Where's he?
Let's see. If you were like, you went up, you got a baby.
What's he doing?
Wind, yeah.
Where's he going?
Like, pat your back, rub your back like that.
That's quite nice, actually.
Ooh. There we go, you see.
Ooh. You didn't last very long, but I enjoyed that.
And you were on about...
you got very manly hands.
You were on about buses earlier as well, weren't you?
Yeah, I was.
Because my Uncle George used to be a bus conductor back in the day.
Oh, really?
Yeah, yeah.
I miss the conductors.
Yeah, he got the sack though. He kept telling people where to get off. So, early kick-off this afternoon.
This is what he does, you see. I've only known you a few months, and already I'm getting the cut of your jib. You win me over by rubbing my back in a very seductive way, it's got to be said. Your wife must be very, very lucky.
It's all in the wrist action.
And then you... Please. And then you set me up with a terrible gag like that. I've got a mind not to let you sell your show, but go on, do it.
Copyright of the Beano. Yeah, early kickoff from midday, then in 5 minutes, building up to all of today's big games. Obviously, we've got Ipswich Blues on 95.6 FM. I'll be heading down to Molineux as well to join Mike Taylor for Wolves Port Vale, that on DAB in the Black Country. Preston North End against Warsaw. We've got Villa to come tomorrow against Norwich. So this afternoon, your most memorable away day as a football supporter, the most memorable trip away, because most of them are miserable, and also complete the sentence... The greatest sports commentator of all time is... And the reason I'm asking that is because the great John Arlott would have been 100 this week. So there we go. And probably more bad jokes as well.
Oh, please. Well, that's the reason I can't listen to you. It's for medical reasons, because your jokes are so bad, Daz.
Good luck with your windy pops.
Thank you very much indeed. And also, a quick reminder that there'll be Daz on at midday. Quick reminder, Keith Middleton is back tonight from 10 with his 70s and 80s extravaganza. Tonight, Robin Beck, who had a number one hit with The First Time, talks to Keith. And you can hear Keith chatting to Graham Bonnet of Rainbow. And it's also the second week of his Word Up Challenge. Will you work it out and become the very first Word Up wizard? All this and the best 70s and 80s songs tonight with Keith from 10 p.m. Trev's in Walsall. Morning, Trev.
Hello, mate. How are you?
I'm fine, Trev. You sound like you're having a good time.
I'm just about to park my car in Walsall, go shopping. Erin Dawes is holding the phone, so I'm not breaking the law.
Good for you, although we're probably infringing it slightly. What would you like to say, Trev?
Well, why are we talking about all these cuts all the while when we keep spending or sending billions abroad?
Right.
I mean, when there's a problem abroad, oh, they send them 10 million. There's a problem 200 miles down the road. We ain't sent them sod all. They've all got their houses full of water. Why do we keep sending it abroad and not spend it in this country?
Give me some examples of where we sent it abroad and you'd rather that money stayed here.
Well, whenever there's a disaster, there's 10 million available. I can't think of it off the top of my head, but there always is money available if there's a disaster abroad.
But with the greatest of respect to what's happening in the south and the southwest of England, the disasters abroad are normally much bigger and they are less equipped to deal with it. In the southwest, there's been some flooding. I don't think that many people have lost their lives. They'll lose a bit of money, but in the great scheme of things, they'll be all right. Well, they'll get their houses back. They just need to clean them up.
Not as simple as that, though, is it?
But then also, when there's an earthquake in Pakistan and hundreds of people die, or there's a tsunami in Thailand and thousands of people's lives are ruined, then shouldn't we be giving money to things like that?
Well, I always think charity began at home myself, but obviously I'm in the minority.
But Trev, isn't the whole planet our home?
No! I live in the West Midlands now. I've emigrated from down south. This is where I live. That's what I want to look after.
Trev, thank you very much indeed. Oh, great answer. Isn't the whole world our home? No! I live in the West Midlands! Trev, thank you very much indeed. Listen, let me quickly do... I've got some emails and bits and pieces. What I have not done. They're all over the shop, so let me just have a little bit of a look. What we were talking about in the first hour. About when people pass on and how your friends and your relatives may or may not have reacted. Joan says, when I lost my husband after 47 years of marriage, I shall never forget the 8 friends who came to see me the same evening. Oh my gosh, but the worst things said to me were, we've all got to die sometime. And you're relatively young, you'll find someone else. I got used to people not sitting next to me or crossing the road. It happens. Wow. Another thing that people say, he had a good innings. Yeah, don't bring cricket into it, for goodness sakes. Joan, thank you, and I'm glad we got to squeeze that email in. And one comment on the bus passes. Barry says, if I could, I would give my bus pass to a young person who is struggling to afford to pay the unfair transport costs to get to work. Well, that's very noble of you, Barry. Thank you for that. Right, that's it. That's your lot. That's all we've got time for this morning. Don't forget, you can get in touch throughout the week if you've got a story or something you'd like to hear on the show. You can send me an email, ian.lee@bbc.co.uk, ian.lee@bbc.co.uk. Thank you so much for all of the phone calls this morning, all of the emails, all of the texts, some really great phone calls. I shall be back next week at 9 o'clock. I'm going to shut up now, and I will shut up, Daz, that's a guarantee, because it's time for Daz to take over.